welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by this very white guy.
And you are very white indeed.
Oh, today especially.
Super white. We have our monthly interaction with the socio-president. I'm trying different things.
I'm here.
I'm going to try different things.
We have the monthly conflation with Carl.
With our associate producer. Carl, what's going on, Carl?
Nothing much. Just hanging out, you know, just here for my monthly visit.
Yes, so just good to have you back. Yes, right. Coming through.
If I don't show up, there's a problem.
Exactly. Big problem.
You know, she's the producer. She'd fucking shit on you in a heartbeat. You'd be done. Your associate producer could be cut. What? He stood us up? He's out.
Exactly.
Stop. That's not true. Carl will
Is there another
be
Carl?
Producer.
Is there another Carl out there?
Another Carl in here? If this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can also find us on our website, interracialjohn.com. And you can, of course, find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Just search Interracial John. Again, J-A-W-N. And we love feedback. So send us some feedback. If you leave us a review that gives us 5 stars on iTunes or Stitcher, we will read it here on the air. You can also email us feedback at interracialjohn@gmail.com. And you can leave us a voicemail at 657-JOHNERS. That's J-A-W-N-E-R-S. And if it's under 3 minutes, we will play it here on the air. And it's not crazy. We don't play crazy on the air. Only Drew gets to be crazy on the air.
That's right. I have the sole provenance of crazy town right here.
Right. And a quick shout out to the black guy who tips for those feedback rules, as we got them from the Podfather, Rod and Karen. And we did have a little bit of feedback. I'm just going to read them real quick and get them out of the way, not because they're not important, but they are. But we have a new listener, Susie6.5 on Twitter, and she left us some cool comments.
Thank you, Susie, both
on our Facebook page, and she also gave us a shout out on Twitter. She says, "I listen to a lot of podcasts. At Interracial John is one of my faves. Check it out." She shared our Stitcher link, so thank you for that, Susie6.5. And then Mrs. Weeks had a question for us. She says she's behind. She's on episode 56, and she says, "Drew plays spades?" Question mark.
Do white people not play spades? Is that unusual?
Well, you know. Okay, here's
the space before I even started dating you, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the real question for both of you: right. Joker, Deuce, Ace, or regular? She wants.
Oh, I got an easy, quick answer for that. You're gonna? Should I start?
Go ahead.
I'm regular. 13 spades. I can count them. I don't got to fuck around with jokers, twos. When you start putting them jokers in, now the statistics, the ratios, there's 13 cards to suit. I can count them 52 cards.
You're
easy.
Counting cards in spades?
You have
what?
To. You have to.
He's so white. Anyways.
What do you mean he's so white? How do you, wait, let's just stop a second. It's a game, right? Do you not know the
really?
Rules of a game?
I'm and aware
do you
not, of the rules of the
you,
game.
Let me ask you this. When you do other things that involve set numbers, do you count the things when we play a choir? You don't count those either, Leslie?
What are you talking about?
When we play a choir.
I'm not saying you're counting cards is no way. Just you're not wanting Joker, Deuce, Ace. Because, quite frankly, all black people play Joker, Deuce, Ace.
I'll play any version. I find it easier for me. The statistics are more consistent.
That's a typical white response. Sure. You always want everything easier for
you. Well, fucking why not? I want to play the game that I'm best at.
Here it is, Carl.
I'm going to make a confession.
Go ahead. You don't play spades.
I have no idea how to play spades.
That's okay.
Never played it.
You're still blacker than me.
Okay.
That's not very hard, but okay. So thank you to both Mrs. Weeks for that question, and we have both
answered
it. What
about you, Leslie? You
I jokers? Said Joker, Deuce, Ace, like a black people play, because I am black. And
that throws everything off, man. 15 fucking Trump cards, 13. That's just, no, I don't like
true.
That.
Just,
too many Trumps.
See how he is?
Too many
see,
Trumps.
See how he is? Mm-hmm. If you are not familiar with our monthly guest, associate producer Carl, he is from the STL, but he now resides in a suburb of the Chi. He is a self-proclaimed blurred, a huge fan of cats, and also a fan of huge cats. And he works in the tech industry, and he's just an all-around good dude, and we love having him on here. And when we say he's the associate producer, we say that because half of the content that we cover here on the show is provided directly from Carl. So welcome him to the show. Woo!
Yeah, that's in fact, I have your theme music. I got your intro.
Hey, I woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had to head on down to school because the teacher said, "Everybody put on your thinking caps because we're going back to school with What's Up with
Carl."
What's up with Carl?
What's up with Carl?
Ooh,
wee.
What's up with Carl? What's up with Carl?
Reading, writing, so exciting. What's up with that? Homework, shop class, you fail, I pass.
What's up with Carl?
There's one, I gotta get the big
What's
one.
Up
always
with
doing.
Carl.
What's up with Carl?
Yes. I'll cut that intro next time. It was a little too long. I just had to get the one, you know, what's up with Carl?
What's up with Carl? So what is up with Carl? What's going on, dude?
Nothing much. So a little update from the last time I was on last month. I talked about going through that interview process. I actually got the job.
Woo!
Yeah.
Now, is this a promotion with pay or a no motion?
It is a promotion.
Oh,
nice.
Snap.
You're nuts, double ding.
Ding, ding,
yeah,
ding.
Pretty excited about this. So as I was thinking about how I got into that position, it was clearly because I'm black.
Well, you mentioned last time that you were the only black guy in the whole room.
Right, and it's not because of what you would think. So let me kind of paint the picture here. So
do it. Do we need some background music? Or
No, you're
okay.
Good.
Okay, good.
You won't need
what would the background to this be?
It would be like, you know, Bill Bixby walking in the Hulk, like, doom, boom, doom, doom. That's
that
what it should
right.
be.
So as I was going through the process, I had a chance to go out to dinner with one of the clients that I would potentially be responsible for.
Uh-huh.
And it just happened, since I was in the area, one of the person that actually recommended me for the job said, hey, why don't you come out to dinner with us?
Ooh.
I'm going to go with clients and some of your potential peers. So during the dinner, yeah, have the music in the background.
That's
the
dinner,
it's perfect.
During the dinner, there's like this guy, this client. They're from New York. So this guy is total New York. Kind of a big guy. He's also black as well. But he is totally just saying a ton of inappropriate stuff. I mean, as waitresses are walking by, he's talking about waitresses. He told the story. I have to tell the story.
This is the client that's doing this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sure. Okay, always. Okay.
It always, yeah. So he tells a story about one time he was at this bar and he kind of hit on this girl. He picked her up and then went back to his hotel room. He was there for business. And she was white. Obviously, he's black. And he gets back to the room and she takes off her shirt and she has a huge Confederate flag tattooed on the back of on her back. Yeah. And he's like, yeah. He's like, what? Hold on. We can't do this. So he's like, yeah, we ended up kind of talking the rest of the night and that was that. So I was there with some of my potential peers, and one manager in particular that would be my peer, I could totally tell he was super uncomfortable during this entire interaction. I mean, his face was red.
The peer's a white guy?
Yeah, he's a white guy.
His face being red might be the first indicator of that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's kind of looking around. He doesn't know what to do. Da, da, da. So we get to the interview section. At the end of the interview, he's like, yeah, one of the things that this guy that was at the dinner is saying this, he's like, yeah, one of the things that really enticed me about Carl is he was able to keep cool in that type of situation where, you know, it's inappropriate things and you know, kind of a tensious or some tension in the room there. I'm thinking to myself, that's par for the course.
Like, yeah. That's how I have to deal every day.
Black. Yeah, exactly. So that's how I got the job, because I was black, because that was... Because
we are trained to deal with tension.
Exactly. So... But yeah, it should be a good fit for me. I'm pretty excited about it. I start the beginning of next month, so we'll see how it goes.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Yeah,
that's wonderful and news.
Is this client a big client? He's like one of your clients now?
Yeah, it'll be a big client. It may or may not be one of my clients, but regardless, it was a big client. And they, you know, after the dinner, the guy comes to me, he's like, hey, it's a pleasure meeting you. I had a great conversation. I'm thinking, yeah, you're kind of an ass, but okay.
And, you know, I'm not saying that you got it because you're black, but I'm certain at some point in that meeting of all these white dudes, like, you know, that client from New York, that black guy, he's kind of, you know, we don't have any black people on the team. And
exactly.
He's kind of saying some weird stuff. And, you know, do you think Carl could diffuse that situation?
That actually reminds me of something. Yesterday I saw this thing of you guys know Lee Daniels.
Is the butler.
The butler. And he's also the EP of and creator of Empire as well. So he was on this panel talking about what was he talking about? Oh, yeah. He was talking about writers and how he has black writers and how he's so excited about it. Let me see if I can find it. While we're doing that, Drew, while I'm doing that, Drew, why don't you talk about your hot dog story? Because I sent Drew went to go. We're getting used to our new surroundings here in the Great Midwest. You know, it's okay.
It's not Philly. The entire town is much smaller, so we're getting used to things being smaller. But and we're in a neighborhood that's. You know, emerging to some degree. It's, you know, it's probably a black neighborhood, diverse neighborhood. So it is a little bit of a food desert, and ain't shit around here to eat and not a lot of places. But we just saw, and we live between the sort of really, really wealthy part of this area, the suburb East Grand Rapids, and then, like, you know, downtown Grand Rapids. Like, we're in the middle there on the southeast side.
We're in the ghetto. It's awesome.
So, but closer towards the really rich people, so in between the really rich people and us, about a mile and a bit from our house, so pretty close, they're opening up a new place that's kind of like a Whole Foods competitor or like a Trader Joe's competitor called Fresh
We've
Time
seen
Market.
We've seen this wave of very looking, successful shows.
Yeah, sorry, guys. Sorry.
We're looking forward to that. That's but so, as I said, we're figuring shit out, and we saw this place that was like, you know, the Hot Dog King or King of Dogs or something like that. I'm like, all right, cool. Get a hot dog. Check it out. It was the most, like, whack-ass, fucked-up place I'd ever been to. I don't know what – like, I think I know Southwest Michigan and how they do, like, breakfast and lunch but not dinner, and there's some weird shit. But, like, this was just bizarre.
What happened?
Well, so, first of all, Leslie, you know the place we went to and we saw it in the back there? That location, the hot dog thing, goes all the way through to the other side of
the
block.
Yeah, that's
what
I figured. You could tell
and
that on the map.
On the other side of the block is, like – it's more of a pedestrian area.
Right.
So that front part is barely like 100 square feet, and it's where all the action happens. And walking in all the way through the back part, it's like cafeteria style, like seating for like, honestly, like 40, 50 people. Empty. Nobody in there. They have seating for like 50 people.
Wow.
I get up to the front part. I'm thinking, oh, this got to be a big restaurant. They got seating for like 50 people and shit. Are you here for hot dogs or ice cream? That was first question. I was like, hot dogs, I guess. And I was like, you know. Well, you know, you have a sandwich, and he's like, oh, you know, our menu's behind us. I'm like, oh, okay. So I turn to look at the menu. It's a menu, nothing but hot dogs. And it's like, you know, like the Chester's got like onions and this, and the so-and-so's got all these other toppings and shit. And he's like, well, you can, you know, kind of make your own. I was like, okay, do you have pickle spears? No. Oh, okay. Do you have sliced cheese? No. Oh, okay. Do you have this? No. I was like, well, geez, what do you have?
Ketchup.
So, So I order, I order the hot dog. And first of all, they're boiled. Fuck, just, you know, don't. Fucking boiling a hot dog. That's
the
whitest fucking thing.
Oh, my God. Did they put mayonnaise on it, too?
You can deep fry it. You can deep fry a hot dog. Literally. I'm cool with that. Grill it on a flat top. Fucking whatever. Don't boil it.
Put it in a pan if you want to, but boiling it?
You bite into the boiled skin of a hot dog and it like snaps.
Gross.
It's gross.
Disgusting.
It's gross. So they boil it.
And it's all like pink.
Yeah. Terrible. So they boil the hot dogs. And mind you, I've ordered four, and they got nothing in this bitch. I'm like, do you have any sandwiches? No. Well, I guess we could make you a burger. That's what he says. I guess we could make you a burger.
So it's a hot dog place.
Where would he find burgers, though?
I really don't know.
Okay.
And
we weren't really
there was
find
about
out.
Like four or five people in there, and none of them over the age of 17.
Were they working there?
Yes. There was like a gray area. Was it work? Was it play? Were they hanging out? Because they're like talking to each other about like, so-and-so's having a party and we're doing this, and one of them went and sat down in the restaurant part like with their uniform on. Like I couldn't understand it. So all five of them take fucking forever to make my hot dogs, and I order four hot dogs, two for Leslie, two for me, and they had chili hot dogs. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll take some chili, right? Like, you know, a little bit of chili. You don't have anything here. There's no sorry, on the menu it said soups today. And had the broccoli cheddar soup. I'm like, oh, I'll take a cup of broccoli cheddar. Oh, you know, we're kind of like experimenting with things, and it didn't work out today. That was its answer. We're experimenting with things, and it didn't work out today. I'm like, but you've got it on the menu. Like, why you're bored? Like, it's a chalkboard. Like, wipe it off. Like, you don't have fucking soup? Wipe it off. He's like, well, we got chili for the chili dogs. I'm like, well, okay, I guess I'll take a cup of chili. He's like, you want some, you know, this? And I'm like, yeah, put some cheese. You got sour cream? Nope, no sour cream. Okay. Do you have some of this? Great. Okay. So I'm waiting for these hot dogs to be boiled, apparently. And here comes fucking person. And again, I've ordered four fucking hot dogs and this chili. Comes out with like a cup of chili, like, and hands it to me. Like, I'm sorry. This is to go. Like, you really
thought
I was going to sit here and eat four fucking hot dogs
and
chili? Christ. And then, so, like, the to-go totally threw them off. Like, no one's ever ordered food to-go. Their version of to-go was, like, the boat, like the paper, like boat that a hot dog would come in with a paper towel over top of it.
Yeah.
That's to go. Boat paper towel, hot dog. I was like, okay. It just was a tour. And then I come home, and then she's like, the fuck with these hot dogs? I'm like, sorry, I was kind of crazy. She's like, well, what else? Did you get me? I was like, no, they didn't have anything else. They didn't have anything else? No, they had fucking nothing else. It was total, it was bizarre.
You should have stopped somewhere else and got me something. Yeah,
I should have. I should have.
You should have been like, this is not going to satisfy
me. You said you wanted hot dogs, so I was like, stuck on autopilot.
Clearly.
Dogs. It just was bizarre.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I did.
So have you found any decent places outside of that to eat?
We found this. Actually, the reason why we even saw that place is there's a great restaurant on the other side of this little strip mall that that this is in called the Old Goat. And we went there for dinner last weekend. It was amazing. Really fresh food, high quality. I would say a sort of gourmand. They had like, I think we had a smoked ham and cheese sandwich on a fresh pretzel bun. And they do fresh fried chicken, which was really great also.
Oh, wow.
Everything was really excellent there. And we were shocked. Drew had two drinks. I had three. And our entire bill was like $50.
There's also there's also a fried fish place that's in a gas station.
Like, oh, yeah. That place is great.
In the gas station.
Yeah.
And then there's what was the other? Oh, we have Leslie didn't go in, but I tried to order a pizza from this place up the road.
Oh, God.
It was straight out of fucking like Sal's. It was Sal's Pizzeria from fucking really? Detroit thing. Oh, my God. Like white Italian
Except
dudes,
the pizza sucked.
Oh, the pizza sucked. And there was like 8 different customers in there, all old white people, all like, you know, old Italian white people. Not, and it's in straight up like this neighborhood's like blacker than blacker than black. And I was like, right. Wow, I've never seen this many white people. They're all here in Sal's Pizzeria at this place.
Apparently, yes, that's where they hang out.
And the food was awful.
Yeah, but there definitely have some good restaurants here in Grand Rapids proper. Our neighborhood is kind of a bit of a food desert, but as Drew mentioned, they are opening a new kind of whole Meyer's version of Whole Foods a couple blocks away, which will be really great. So that will make it no longer a food desert, actually, in terms of mileage. And then they just opened Trader Joe's not that far from here, maybe like 4 miles from here, like yesterday. So, that you know, definitely I'd say that those options would be great for us because I think it'll have more familiar things because I just, you know, we're not used to shopping at like ShopRite, which is basically.
We are like maybe 10 minutes from an area that's like this huge street, right? Like it's a giant, it's called 28th Street, and it's like basically, you know, Home Depot, Best Buy, chain restaurant, repeat.
Right.
And it's like that for miles and
there's
miles
like
and miles.
Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, so you name a fast food or a chain restaurant, we can get to it. It's over there.
But, you know, but I would say Grand Rapids has decent restaurants, generally speaking. The Grove is good, and Johnny B's is good.
That's cheaper, too.
Do they have any farmers markets? I would imagine.
Yeah, they do. They have a great one on Fountain Street, and they have a couple of other ones. I don't know where the other ones are. And they have this thing called the Downtown Market, which is a little bit controversial because it's in a, I would say, predominantly black area called Hartside, but it's the prices there are like way out of
when
the price
she says
range
it,
of the people.
It's a market. Like I envision markets in different ways, and there's like the farmers markets, like they're stalls that farm trucks pull up to, and this is my stall, and I'm here at this time and this day. This downtown market, the entire facility was built and bought and created by a developer, and then the developer like leased out pieces of the space.
It like wants to be Reading Terminal, but it's not. That's what it's like, Drew.
It is. It's trying to be like Reading Terminal, but it's all very, you know,
like fish and chips and a barbecue place and a gourmet,
And I just think the developer that built it went over the top with probably the rents and things. Only, you know, people. And it's all white people. And you got to pay to park
all
there.
White people.
It's bizarre.
You got to pay to,
It's just like completely. But the food is good. The food is good.
It seems to me it's hard to find a good farmer's market. So the only two that I've been to that are really good, obviously, is Reading. And there's one in St. Louis. It's in Soulard. It's called Soulard Market. And, you know, when I'm there on the weekends, I'll usually go. I was there for, what was the last holiday? Was it Labor Day or Memorial Day, whatever it was? I went back there and I went with mom. And it's a huge market. And just like you said, Drew, they have the stalls where the trucks literally pull up and they can have their wares out and you can buy it. But it's a fantastic market. But there aren't a whole lot here where I live. There's like a little small ones, but nothing to that effect of like a Reading or Soulard.
Yeah,
there's one in Cleveland that we went to called West Side Markets. It's Cleveland's oldest public market. It's really so similar to Reading. I've never been in a market that's better than Reading. I mean, Chelsea Market's pretty good in New York.
For those that are uninitiated, Reading Terminal Market in Philadelphia is the largest, longest standing, continually operating public market, I think, in the world.
Yeah,
the
well, in the country, oh, wow. in the
it's,
U.S.
It's been around for 200 years, yeah. it, you know, it's, and it's fantastic. And there's nothing that's going to come close to
no
that.
No way.
Yeah.
But Jersey was good. Jersey had a bunch
Jersey
of farmers markets.
Good farmers markets. That's true. That's true. Okay, so I did find this video. So this is Empire creator Lee Daniels. He was invited to a Hollywood Reporter roundtable with other Hollywood producers and of TV shows and movies. So here's Lee, and this is a little clip of the discussion. It's about 2 minutes, but it's really good.
That have diverse casts, whether it's Blackish or it's Empire.
And how much pressure do all of you feel now to populate your rooms with diverse writers and also the pressure to cast actors who aren't white?
I'll tell you, nothing is more beautiful right now than to go into this room, to the writer's room of Empire. I don't know what gives me more pleasure, watching my story unfold or going in and watching the a room full of black people talking for me and saying words that and writing words that black people, I hate white people writing for black people. Ooh. It's so offensive. Ooh. And so it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And
so
I mean, taking this incredible.
So I'm just curious, when you went out to.
Yes, we, honey, it's all about reverse racism here. Yes.
I'm
going to keep it 100 with you. We go out and we look specifically for African American voices too.
Right, because when we put the room of the affair together, we specifically look for half men and half women. And so for us, it was important to have a literally a gender equality in our room. So that
there are black American writers on your show.
There's one writer of color, but he's not African American.
Mm-hmm. Bing. Is there any African American writers on your show?
There are not.
How about yours?
Yeah.
How many?
Last season there were two. One of them went off to create her own pilots. So yeah.
Good.
But
how many
it's
on your
interesting
show?
I'm just curious. I want to finish answering your question.
Four. How many Asian Americans do you have?
We have one.
I mean, it's a weird question. Have zero.
Oh, no, we have no Asian Americans.
Yeah, we have zero African Americans in our writers' room of six.
It's repulsive is what it is. And it's inexcusable is what it is.
But do you
and
think?
I'm really happy. I'm really, really happy that if anything, forget the success of Empire. I mean, that's great that we have that. What is important is that people of color know that they are wanted, because y'all done told me that we ain't wanted. So it's a beautiful thing.
Bloop. What did I say to you? Whoa. Leslie and I were talking about Empire because the season premiere was this last week, and we watched it, and it's been great. And I said, you know, it seems like they either consciously made a decision to not acquiesce to white audiences at all. Like, we're going to make this show for black audiences, period. And it's done phenomenal with black audiences, and now it's doing well with white audiences as well. But the show, the writing, the characters, dialogue, it might be the blackest show on TV.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's so real. So real.
Well, it's not real. It's completely
ridiculous. No, I meant the dialogue and
yes,
the language.
The language and the interplay.
It's authentic. That's the word called. Not real. Authentic.
And what Lee said there is, it's like, I hate white people writing for black people. It doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't work. And this is why I talk about this on this show all the time, which is that white people never have to put themselves in the mindset of others, whereas right. black people are able to write for white people. Listen, we have to talk like you all the goddamn time. In every aspect of our life, there's a moment where we have to be like, oh, let me just make this sound okay so these people will understand what the fuck right. I'm trying to say. Whereas if we're talking to each other, the vernacular changes, and maybe we right. use different words or our cadence is different. So it doesn't work the other way. Black people are more than equipped to write dialogue for white people, and the opposite is
what you're saying is that most black people that interact, I say a lot of black folk have to interact in predominantly white spaces.
Yes.
And I'm certain many black folk are either capable or able to code switch in a way to able to write for a white character, whereas a white person just is never going to do that.
No, they're going to be relying on stereotypes and Absolutely. Assumptions versus actual
tropes
experiences.
And bias.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
let
totally
me ask
different.
You something, because this kind of brings up something that happened to me when I was probably maybe in eighth or ninth grade. When did you actively identify code switching, or when did you really become aware of it?
Well, the thing is, for me, being a first generation American in my family, like code switching starts very early, because
right.
I would speak Patois in the house and know that that's not something I could do with other people. So the idea of code switching is very like normal to me and was something that I was already trained to do. And in Jamaica, this is something that you'll see. People will talk Patois with each other in the homestead. And then when they're in business settings, they don't. They speak very proper English, much more proper than Americans speak, I might
add. Yeah, I was going to say, because Jamaican English is UK English, yeah, British English.
Yeah, so so to me, that's not a it wasn't a strange thing to interact with, and it's super, super normal.
And
so
again, when you went to boarding school at 13, it...
Well, before that, I mean...
No, I meant not just, not that it was normal, but that the, you know, very consistent and, because I'm sure, I'm not sure, but didn't you have language and verbiage in school that was different than at home and in public around Brooklyn, or no?
Well, I mean, Brooklyn is such a, like, hodgepodge mosh of so many things, and I think that... I say this all the time, like growing up in a city like New York City, like just as a person, like the kind of interactions you have with people of different races and ethnicities and nationalities, like it just gives you a very different like view on life, like generally speaking. And I, honestly, it's one of those things that like when I left the city for the first time, I went to boarding school, like it was shocking to me the number of people that don't have, that had never had interaction with almost anything except for what exactly like themselves. And it was such a weird thing for me. Somebody who was like, I never met a Jewish person. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I went to like 13 bar mitzvahs last year. Like literally, it was so weird to me to like meet people like that. White people.
You say that's weird. I'm telling you straight up. I was 18, grew up in a sundown town, went to a school that had, you know, I graduated with like 3,800 people. Just my class was 3,800. There was two black people. Yeah. And I say black, and I was like, they were both biracial.
Right.
You know?
No, I understand now. I'm just talking about 13-year-old me if Carl's asked me to go back. So to me, that was one thing that I didn't quite get. And I guess that's when I really realized it, when I understood that not everybody had these, you know, non-homogeneous environments that they came from. And so once I realized that, it was like, okay, now I understand like this, like these lanes that people put themselves in.
Right. Yeah.
That was an eye opener.
What about you, Carl?
I was gonna say, it was weird. So as I think about it, it probably started when I was,
you know, I'm sorry.
Stop.
I'm trolling you, dude. I'm sorry.
I like the music behind it. Let's do that.
Okay,
go ahead. Let's do it.
It actually started when I was a kid, and no. But it was strange. I think I was like in eighth grade. One of my close friends came to my house for the first time, and obviously I'm interacting with my parents, and he's there, and we're all talking, and then we leave, and he says, I'll never forget this, he says, "What did you just say?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "You were talking so fast, and the kind of the, some of the words are kind of broken up." And as I think about that, that was my first, I don't know if it was an awakening, but realizing there were two different worlds. Because before that, you know, I was just, that's the way I talk at home, and it's a little different than I talk when I'm outside of home. But I didn't really think about that. But it wasn't until he pointed that out that I realized, wow, this is kind of two different worlds that I'm straddling and I live in. So that was really my first time that I realized that. So I was just kind of curious as to how you came to that evolution as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the big switch for me was like, I went to like magnet schools and like special programs all through like grade school and junior high school. And so I had like school friends, and I had schools friends from my neighborhood. And that was a big delineator for me. And I think I did a pretty good job of spending time with everybody. But you know, that there would definitely, they didn't mix except for like if I had a party personally. It wasn't like, all these people interacted all the time with each other. So I guess that for me, that was a big, you know, something that I noticed as I started like having more of my time for myself. Like I decided what I was going to do on the weekends and things like that. I started to be like, okay, I had to like balance the time I spent with different friends and things like that. So for me, that was probably the biggest, indicator of that. And you know, Emma Willard is a anomaly in and of itself, so I don't know.
You know, I don't think I've ever told you, Drew.
I mean, has that ever kind of?
So you said that you had this moment, and it kind of, I don't say it triggered a memory, but there's a story. I don't think I've ever told you, Leslie.
Play your music. Okay, now.
Play the music.
Hold on. And so I did. I grew up in a really rich town, right? Like, you know, super super wealthy, but on a kind of like a good thing. We weren't as wealthy as all those other people. And sometimes I used to say that, like, because, you know, I say, oh, I went to this high school. Did you drive a Porsche or a BMW? And, like, that's a joke, but it's really, really true. Like, all my friends drove like Porsches and BMWs and shit. I just didn't. So I had a friend and his parents were super rich, like lived on the lake. Like his father was a heart surgeon, was so good that when the president was in town, he had to be on call. Operated on Harold Washington when he died, like big time. Like they owned boats and like private planes and Porsches and shit. So I'm friends with this guy. He's, you know, my age, high school. We're hanging out, but we're kind of, you know, two different worlds and classes. And I'm at his house. I think I'm at his pool. We're swimming and shit. Or we're at the beach or the lake or something. And I had a pair of shoes that were my shoes. They're the shoes I had at the time. And I guess they were kind of beat up. Like they might have had some holes and kind of fucking tore up or something. But I come up and I get to go home. And I was like, oh, you know, where are my shoes? I have my shoes here. And he's like, oh, you know, I don't know. I'm like, hey, Mom, you seen these shoes? Oh, I threw those out. I thought they were like, you know, damaged bad shoes. I threw those away. And I was like, the fuck, you threw my shoes away? That's kind of like crazy. And I had to walk home barefoot. Walk home like,
they didn't even give you a pair of stuff.
They don't got like backup shoes for my monster feet, dude. No way.
This deserves that music. Good Lord. You had to walk home barefoot.
Well, but I do remember that being like okay, you know.
That's a different thing.
A different class. Different class, you know, like you just threw
those were your shoes, and she was like, throw these away.
Yeah, just like just threw them out. Like even like to me, it was like, why would you do that? You wouldn't even ask me. Like, you wouldn't, like... Because to her, it was like, oh, just throw those away.
Right.
Right.
Mm-mm-mm.
Wow. That's funny.
That is pretty crazy. Well, let's jump in the show. Let's do this.
Do it.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So, man named Scott Latin, 45, of Whitney, Texas, was arrested in a hoax claiming members of Black Lives Matter vandalized his truck this week. He was arrested on a misdemeanor charge of filing a false report when he put together this whole thing, vandalized his own truck, and wrote Black Lives Matter on it. He also, I might add, received $6,000 in an online fundraiser to help repair said truck. And this dumb fuck, he's such an idiot. He got caught because he vandalized it more. Let's listen to the report here. Oh, wait. Never mind.
God damn it.
They took it off.
Fucking white people.
Anyways.
Damn it.
Yeah. So they noticed discrepancies in the video recordings of him talking to various people. So the police.
He kept amping it up.
Yeah.
He had reporters come out. Oh, I'm the Black Lives Look at this. They took a shit in here. Look at this.
Exactly. Like,
kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Exactly.
Fucking asshole.
So they had initial video where the officers took the report, and then they saw a report on Channel 4, and there was one big discrepancy is he showed that the glove box had been ripped off and the seats were slashed, when that wasn't the case when they took the initial report at all. And so, yeah.
He got a little bit of attention, and he fucking decided, like, oh,
Black Lives Matter.
What got me the attention? This horse shit, so let me fucking amp it up more.
Exactly.
Amp it up
so
more,
so fuck
dude.
That guy. And also, I'll add, this is, I think, the second or third, you know, crime linked to Black Lives Matter that has turned out to have nothing to do with Black Lives Matter at all. Of course.
Fuck!
Of course.
Of course. That cop that they thought they had a whole manhunt, they went on saying, he ended up killing himself. Yep. It was a self-inflicted gunshot.
That dude. Yep.
This reminds me of, I don't know if you guys remember, it was, I think it was Obama's, the first election cycle, the first time he was trying to become president. There was a girl that, I don't know if she took a knife or took a Sharpie and wrote something like, I don't know if you got.
I don't remember this at all.
Oh, yeah. She wrote something on her skin.
Right.
I remember. I have a vague remembering.
And she blamed it on
this.
Somebody?
Yeah.
She blamed on Obama supporters, but it turns out the way they were able to catch her is she wrote it backwards.
Right.
So she wrote it as she was looking in the mirror. So if you were looking at her, it would appear backwards.
Who would have wrote that? Who would have, abusing her, written something on her arm backwards? That's not how you do it.
Because
I got
it while she was looking at it in the mirror. That's what the first time, when I heard this, that's the first thing that came to mind.
That's because we're dealing with the you know, mental fortitude of a how old was she? 13? That's what we're talking about with this dude in his own fucking truck. Assholes. Mm-hmm. So hey, Leslie, you know, you've got all these trips coming up and you're traveling around.
Facts.
What would you feel if I just said, you know what, I don't think I'd like you to go. I'm gonna take your passport and you can't do it. Would that upset you?
I'm not even going to answer that because that's ridiculous, but
that's,
go on.
That's what's happened. That's what's happened in Iran. Iranian woman's soccer captain is going to miss the Asian Cup because her husband has taken her passport.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's basically, it's perfectly legal in Iran. I don't know exactly their legislation is called, but there is no legal recourse because they're married, and the husband has that right and privilege, and he can do kind of whatever he wants. And here, I'll read the story. But per the Associated Press, Ardland's husband, a sports journalist, Mahad Tucci, has taken a 30-year-old midfielder's passport to ensure she will be home for their son's first day of school, according to reports. And it's legit. The thing is that there's no legal recourse for her. Tuchnani didn't just put her documents on a high shelf out of reach. He's acting within the given legal parameters of Iranian law, which posits that a man can deny his wife the ability to travel beyond the country's borders if he chooses.
Wow. Wow, yeah. You know, I've been doing a lot of research on issues affecting women of color around the globe, and obviously this would fall under that category for Women's Freedom Conference. We've been doing our Women's Freedom Friday chat, so it's been interesting seeing people talking about a lot of these issues that affect women of color all over the globe, and it's kind of crazy when you think about the kind of control that men have over women's purview and freedom in so many places, including here in the United States. I might.
Oh yeah. Have. Did you guys, and sort of related, did you see the hashtag masculinity so fragile?
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
The thing that to me, and I don't know if someone's done this like dissertation wise, like a thesis, but there's a definite like a life of a hashtag, right? There's sort of like as it comes more popular and it's trending a little bit, and then it gets really popular, and the different people that interact with it based on its popularity, like when shitty people see something trending, they go to it and they start, you know, acting their way. So it starts with, let's just say, like mostly women, you know, this is the marginalized group, masculinity is so fragile, mocking patriarchy by doing, you know, kind of like ironic things with the hashtag masculinity is so fragile, and then fucking men that are feeling, you know, put upon start coming in and being all fragile in it, and then the men's rights, and then the women that support the men and men's rights, like anti-feminist women, came in. It just the whole thing became this weird, like, I wouldn't say like shit show, but like just the evolution of it, you know, from one phase to the other was like, geez, yeah. Louise, man,
it's a definite life cycle.
Yeah.
You have the early adopters and you go through that whole process.
You could look at the timeline of tweets and the volume of tweets, and then put – that's how you do it. You say each minute by minute, you'd have to say how many tweets were on this topic, and then categorize those tweets as, you know, supportive and positive from, you know –
or for the intended purpose.
Or for the intended purpose, or to distract and troll.
Or the
mock.
Opposite, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true. And we've each created
somebody do that.
Some worldwide or some nationwide trending hashtags.
Not us. I come
somebody.
Up with the fucking ideas. Someone else can execute
I work with
that
the fucking
shit.
People.
I'm a people person, God damn it. No, just get data. Hold on.
I'm sure they probably have it.
I'm sure.
I'm sure somebody actually tracks them because there's a lot of tracking. But it's funny. This whole idea of hashtags is very interesting to me. I, quote unquote, was a creator of the Ferguson Taught Me hashtag on the anniversary of Mike Brown's death. And Ferguson Response, you know, it was just an activity I put together for people to do online. And it ended up trending, you know, nationwide. And I don't know. I can't remember. I think it's Twitter. They send you a thing that's like, you know, you were the first person to tweet this and da, 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 da. And it turns into this like whole thing, which I had no idea. Somebody was like, we have to put that you're the creator of it now. And like, I don't know. It's just a weird like thing.
And when you're talking about the life cycle, the hashtag, it starts off with people, you know, black and white, positively using the hashtag appropriately, and then people like Ferguson taught me that blacks are thugs and horrible and crims. You punch a cop, you get killed. You fucking, you know, it's like Jesus Christ. Like it just because you can't. It's a hashtag. It's open. Anybody can use it. And it just I'd love to see those sort of trends for those kind of hashtags. They'd be sweet.
Yeah,
if someone's got that engine or algorithm, send me a note. Ping, nope. Very white guy. Yeah,
give me a note on that. Yes. So also this week, the U.S. Accepts UN advice on police violence, racism, and advocates call for action. The review before the Human Rights Council saw the U.S. slammed over deaths of black men and women at the hands of police. And this week, they accepted most of the recommendations from UN member states on combating racial discrimination, racial profiling, and the use of excessive force by police officers, as well as addressing racial disparities in the use of the death penalty. According to a report outlining U.S.'s response to a review of the country's human rights record, formally adopted by the Human Rights Council in Geneva on Thursday, they accepted 44 recommendations on eliminating racial discrimination and tackling excessive police force, supported a further 20 in part, and rejected one recommendation, the creation of an independent commission to prosecute racially motivated crimes. Justin Mazzola, who's a researcher with Amnesty in, USA and co-author of Deadly Force, said the review is helpful in terms of putting the United States on record, but it's just words at this point, and there needs to be concrete action. There are specific steps that the U.S. can take in terms of following through the recommendations. So 117 nations offered comments and recommendations. Let's just put that in perspective alone, just that, like, this is their normal review that comes up, that each nation that's a member of the United Nations has this human rights record review. And out of this review of our country, 117 other countries in the UN said, yep, y'all are fucked up here.
Right.
Seriously.
And one of the things I thought was interesting was that they talk specifically about, they call them, the U.S. to abolish the death penalty, to cease extrajudicial killings, to punish those responsible for torture, to protect their human rights of immigrants and indigenous people, and to close Guantanamo Bay.
I agree on all
of those things.
Co-sign everyone.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they also talked about the use of lethal force. Under international law and standards, lethal force must be reserved as a last resort. Only
Never.
After other nonviolent means are attempted first and exhausted, but also for only those instances where the officers face an imminent threat of death or serious injury.
Right, that's the right there. Bullshit.
The report found that none of the U.S. states meet international laws and standards on the use of lethal force by police officers. 9 states and Washington, D.C. have 0 laws in place governing police use of lethal force. So I thought that was an interesting piece that came out of that. So, you know, I think it's great that they've accepted these, but obviously, you know, action is definitely needed. But I think it's always good to see us called on our shit in wider societies, because too often, you know, our American individualism and, you know, all of this, you know, nationalistic bullshit that we're the greatest gets fed to our nation, especially our children, especially white children, and they think that we do no wrong. And so this is just one other, you know, tool for us to say those things.
What are the odds that we move on this? I mean, what are the odds that something actually happens from
that's my
report?
Well, I think that there's pressure coming from a lot of areas, and that's what we want. You know, I think I'm always like, I always push back when people make these comments like, oh, it's just a report, it doesn't mean anything. It's like, no, these reports and this data are leveraged. They're a wedge that activists and organizers are able to use to push for change. And when we have this pressure coming from multiple points, it makes it impossible for things not to happen.
Gotcha.
So will this one report do something? Probably not, but it's a big one and it's in a very large stage. And it helps us reinforce things that we already have been saying, that we already know. And it's always better to have concrete things when you're going in to have conversations about making change in policy changes. So, you know, that's what I would say to that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, you know, there's so much that we do as a country that's so fucking abjectly hypocritical. It's insane. You know, like we push this, you said American exceptionalism. We push worldwide democracy, our form of democracy, as some sort of, like, you know, holy grail and it's perfect and this and that.
Yeah.
Yet we have corporatist personhood. We have black dark money. You know, we have all this fucking, you know, PACs that are fucking buying up fucking, you know, billions of dollars of ads and Coke-billers influencing elections. You know, our shit isn't fucking anywhere near something I would export as a fucking ideal. And we don't only just export it. We export that with our militarization and putting these puppet dictators. And like, oh, look, it's a democracy.
It's a democracy.
Well, speaking of democracy, our one of our elected officials, one Kim Davis, is making a new home for herself in the Republican Party. She, of course, as you all know, grabbed headlines recently for refusing to issue same-sex marriage license in Kentucky. And she announced a switch on Friday. She was elected as a Democrat in Rowan County to a seat previously held by her mother. Let me just say that once again. She was elected as a Democrat in Rowan County to a seat previously held by her mother.
That's some fucking nepotistic shit. Okay. Dude, white people be hoarding fucking shit like fucking nobody, dude. Elected positions? Damn, dude. I'm as a very white guy, I'm almost blown away, dude. That white people manage to hold a fucking elected position? Fuck, dude.
Mm.
Damn.
She says that, quote, my husband and I talked about it. Hold on, let me put my good Kim Davis voice on. My husband and I talked about it for a while. And we came to the conclusion that the Democratic Party left us a long time ago. So why are we hanging on? End quote.
White people.
So, yeah. So I guess welcome to the Republican Party, Kim. I guess have fun over there. Apparently, the only things they need you to be are a racist or a homophobe, and preferably both, to be in the GOP, which we'll get into later. The White House had some statements about them this week, which I thought were pretty interesting.
You know what, Kim? Kim,
woo, you hear that? That's the sound of 2015 pulling you over, people. Suck it.
Honestly, dude, that's the new routine now. Fucking horrible, whatever. Trolling, you know, exposure. fucked up shit you say, do, act, whatever. You're under attack. GoFundMe account. Switch parties. Where's the book deal? That's like, dun, 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 dun. That's what she's fucking doing, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Fuck me, dude.
We need a palate cleanser here.
Wow. I'm just blown away.
Lames of Blackness this week, of course. If people saw last night, first of all, the state dinner, the Chinese state dinner was last night. And let me tell you that FLOTUS and POTUS slayed the game. Michelle Obama, like, shut that shit down. She's so beautiful. And we probably will never have a flyer first lady and president ever. And I'm excited about that. But this week... Obama played tribute to female civil rights leaders, which was really exciting, at the Congressional Black Caucus. He says women were the foot soldiers. Women strategized boycotts. Women organized marches. Even if they weren't allowed to run the civil rights organizations on paper behind the scenes, they were the thinkers and the doers making things happen each and every day, doing the work that no one else wanted to do. Women made the movement happen. Which was really great. He even invoked his wife, Michelle, as an example of the attitudes about black women that he said persist. The First Lady, a lawyer with degrees from two Ivy League universities, has spoken on numerous occasions of being told by teachers that she was setting her sights too high. Quote, Obama says, those stereotypes and pressures that still affect our girls. So we have to all be louder than the voices that are telling our girls that they are not good enough, that they've got to act a certain way. So I'm really excited to see. It's pretty cool that he spotlighted, and he paid tribute to some specific women as well, not just as a general information. But I thought it was just really great of him to do that.
That's fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
That's kick-ass. Obama, I can't wait to see what he does out of office, because he's just been these last... 6-7 months since the last election, he's just been on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
He sure has been. On the flip side,
it's a GOP clown car.
Yeah, so this week, Jeb Bush, well, let's let him talk for himself. How about that?
In his own words.
Let's just hear what he got to say.
If you double that, you're still at a low number, right? But if you double that, you win elections in places like Ohio and Virginia. And we should make that case, because our message is one of hope and aspiration. It isn't one of division and get in line and we'll take care of you with free stuff. Our message is one that is uplifting, that says you can achieve earned success. We're on your side.
Yeah, wasn't this question in response to what does his party offer to black people?
Yes, what is the GOP going to do to get the black vote?
Yeah, that was his answer. We ain't about that free stuff. Really? The fuck, man?
We ain't about that free stuff.
First of all, that narrative is such horse shit, and it's so coded dog whistle fucking, you know, it's not even coded, because he's asked about black people, and he's talking about black people. And the reason they're going to come is because we're about, you know, prosper and hope and something, not about standing in line and getting free stuff. That is just it's the worst fucking narrative. And specifically because a new report just came out and showed that Obamacare, the number one race that's taking advantage of Obamacare, white people, of course, because there's more white people. You know, like, people really get confused by those statistics. Like, to be, you know, just put it real clear, any listeners here, I can put it down. Take the total number of people that are below the poverty line, that are on welfare, taking EBT and debit cards. Because white people make up a lot of our population, the number of white people that total are below the poverty line is very, very large. In fact, it's the largest. Although it's not a large number of total white people. The percentage of white people is small, but the total number that are below the poverty line is large. It's the opposite for black people.
Right.
There are more white people that are below the poverty line. There are more white people that are taking advantage of Obamacare. There are more white people that are you know, destitute and poor, because there are more white people, period. But as a percentage, a greater number of black people are in those circumstances. And people get that so fucking confused. It's like they code it as a black thing, but it's like, it's wrong. It's not even hypocritical. It's incorrect. Mm. No, the absolute data shows it's incorrect.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, the coded language doesn't work with the fucking, when the facts are out. Like, you could have done that shit in the 60s when you're talking amorphously about crime, when they invented the sort of like Southern, you know, strategy and this whole like, you know, anti-black, anti-criminal coded language. And, you know, it goes all the way through history. Reagan, when Reagan was stumping in the 80s, there was two speeches. One he gave in Milwaukee, and he used the word, was it thug or was it brute, a black brute? And the audience reaction was kind of like, whoa, you know, a little bit weird. And then he changed it. He, same fucking story, and Black Brute's now like, you know, violent criminal. I swear to God, like you can see it in his campaign stops, right? So this shit's, it's been going on and on and on, but when it comes to poverty and debit cards and Obamacare and welfare and shit, it's just, it's categorically incorrect.
Yeah, and like white people talking about getting stuff for free is like the biggest fucking joke ever.
Right. We stole a fucking continent. We enslaved a fucking group of labor.
Let me read Jelani Cobb tweeted free. A bit about this. He says, Jeb Bush plans to win black votes by not offering us, quote, free stuff. You mean like the 246 years of uncompensated labor we gave you? Or the uncompensated sharecropping and convict labor we gave you after slavery technically ended? Or by free, were you referring to the federal housing subsidies that this country gave to whites for decades while excluding us entirely? Or the intergenerational equity that home ownership gave white people to the exclusion of black people? How about that beautiful GI Bill structured to minimize black participation exactly. while creating a college-educated class of white Americans? It's the logic of stealing from someone and then saying that if you paid them back, it would be a giveaway that ruined their work ethic.
Jeb Bush, say that right there again.
Yes, it's the logic of stealing from someone and then saying that if you paid them back, it would be a giveaway that ruined their work ethic.
That's the truth. That's beautiful.
Jeb Bush has hit peak whiteness and it's just September. Nothing you could give us would be free, Jeb. You're already too deep in our debt. For a multi-century real. Regime of plunder and theft then condescends to those whom it has robbed, accuses them of wanting free stuff.
Fucking A.
Yeah, so shout out to you, Jelani Cobb. You can follow him at Jelani9 on Twitter. But said. Yeah, just I thought he like encapsulated everything that's such bullshit about that.
For real, dude.
What are your thoughts, Carl?
Yeah, I could not have said it better myself. It's just unbelievable.
Will that be his Romney's 47% comment? Is it getting a lot of coverage? Is it, you know, are people just like aghast like we are, or is this
people are like, no, it's not a blip. People are just like, are you kidding me? Are you for real right now? But I think that there's this, you know, weird thing happening on the GOP that's just like, the more racist you are, the more ridiculous, like you just get more of them to be there for you. It's a weird time.
Again, let's just go back to the numbers. The most recent election was Romney. And Obama won, of course, the electoral count. If you break down state by race. Romney won every 47 out of the 50 states in the white demographic, specifically the white male demographic.
Yeah. Of course he did. He's a white male.
And that's my point is I'm saying that there are – so, you know, and people don't like this word like racist, racism as a binary. Either you are
but
or you're
not.
But
I think that was true before. That was true in the first Obama election against John McCain. But that didn't stop John McCain from stopping him and be like, no, he's not a Muslim. He's a nice person.
I hear you.
You know what I mean?
But
my point being
is there are a lot of white people that – will not think of themselves as racist or a supporting of a racist regime or racism in general. That is bad. I'm against that. But then they will make every decision that supports supremacy and anti-black racism. And those decisions include voting with the GOP because it's better than the Dems. It's like, well, you know, yeah, I guess he's kind of racist. That sucks. But I can't vote for, you know, Hillary or Bernie.
Know what their definition of racism is, because that has clearly changed over the years.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously if you were, you know, if you said nigger, you were racist.
That's correct.
Cut and dry. But if I don't say it, clearly I'm not racist. Absolutely. No matter what I may think on the back end of it, I'm not racist.
Well, and
so
you can take that
reconciliation.
I've taken that discussion with many different people, like over, you know, Twitter and Facebook, tons and tons of times. And it usually boils down to either you think there's a problem that's systemic racism, institutional racism, or in some fashion you think black people are inherently inferior, prone to criminality, because they can't deny the racial disparities. The statistics don't lie. And they'll come to it, and I've seen all sort of – it's like, you know, different types of churches. There's Episcopalian and there's this. There's all kinds of fucking horrible white people, and they've got these different sort of views. And there's – you know, we just talked about one the other day that they don't think they're racist at all, and they'll say things like, oh, I don't – you know, the modern I don't see color. Like, I'm colorblind. I don't see color. Like, okay, we get it. That's a microaggression. Like, that's a fucked up way of thinking. Like, most white people are like, okay, I'm not going to say that. Now they'll say, oh, but, you know, we're all part of the human race. We're all the same on the inside. Can't we all just get along? Love will conquer all. And it's the same sort of, like, you know, denying of black
humanity. That's a liberal response. Not a GOP right.
No, I'm talking about, there's just different white people can be different ways. And there can be white people like that, you know, that's not a very good way of being. But there are plenty on the GOP side that they don't think they're racist. They don't think they're being bad. They're just, oh, it's better for the country. And, you know, make America great again. And
i.e. it's better for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, speaking of that,
you know, I hope that shit just honestly, we haven't even talked about it, and it's way far out. But fuck, if that strategy wins, it might just break me, dude. Anyway, sorry.
Well, you know, also this week we had that Trump rally where one of the people stood up at the rally to ask questions, said that President Obama is a Muslim and he's not even American. Donald Trump, of course, did not correct him as such and said they're working on a bunch of things to deal with Muslims, by the way. But the White House took went on the offense a little bit. So let's listen to Press Secretary Ernest, what he has to say about this situation.
Is anybody really surprised that this happened at a Donald Trump rally? I don't think anybody who's been paying attention to Republican politics is at all surprised. The reason for that is that the people who hold these offensive views are part of Mr. Trump's base. And Mr. Trump himself would be the first to tell you that he's got the biggest base of any Republican politician these days.
Point one.
Now, it is too bad that he wasn't able to summon the same kind of patriotism that we saw from Senator McCain.
Wow.
Who responded much more effectively and directly when one of his supporters at one of his campaign events about 7 years ago raised the same kind of false claims. Now, what's also unfortunate is that Mr. Trump isn't the first Republican politician to countenance these kinds of views in order to win votes.
That's the right word, countenance.
In fact, that's precisely what every Republican presidential candidate is doing.
Yep.
When they decline to denounce Mr. Trump's cynical strategy, because they're looking for those same votes.
Hmm.
Now, other Republicans have successfully used this strategy as well. You'll recall that one Republican congressman told a reporter that he was David Duke without the baggage. That congressman was elected by a majority of his colleagues in the House of Representatives to the third highest ranking position in the House.
Bleep.
Those same members of Congress blocked immigration reform. Those same members of Congress opposed reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act. Those same members of Congress couldn't support a simple funding bill because they're eager to defend the Confederate flag. So those are the priorities of today's Republican Party. And they'll continue to be until someone in the Republican Party decides to summon the courage to stand up and change it.
Drop the mic.
Yeah, dude, that's fucking amazing.
Deuces.
Dude, they're so, like, the White House is just, like, on fleek. They're like, yeah, fuck y'all. Mm-mm.
Nope. And that's what I'm saying, though. That fucking strategy fucking works, man.
But I think that they tell them themselves, too. Like, the thing is, like, you can't win an election, a presidential election as a party, with only pandering to the basal you know, parts of your constituency. It doesn't work. We all know that in order to win an election, you have to appeal to at least some people in the middle and some people that maybe in previous elections would have voted on the other side of the aisle. Okay. They have just, you know, decided that they're not going to do that. And I don't understand how they think that they're going to win that way.
I think that they think that they're going to win by suppressing vote in a lot of and variety of ways. Voter ID laws. They fucking make lines longer. They fucking do all kinds of horrible shit.
Yeah, but we woke now, though. See, you know what? The thing.
Yeah.
You're right. We are woke. But what if there's a giant fucking snowstorm and rain and all kinds of shit on fucking November 4th or 5th or whatever and turnout is low? They stole shit in 2000.
Yeah.
They can steal shit. It, you know what I mean? It's got to be. Anyway. The fuck? Where are we here?
I'm sorry.
New segment.
Yeah, new segment.
This week in Sorry's.
This week in Apologies, yes. We have quite a...
Or non-apologies.
Yes, we have quite a trio this week.
Yeah, so the first one coming from Matt Damon, and in case you forgot about a week ago this
week. I just want to urge people to think about whoever this director is, the way that they're going to treat the character of Harmony. Her being a prostitute, the only black person being a hooker who gets hit by her white pimp.
We brought up to each other... So, I think on the surface they look like one thing, but they might end up giving us something that we don't want. And when we're talking about diversity, you do it in the casting of the film, not in the casting of the show.
Ooh. Wow. Okay.
That's Mr. Matt Damon talking over the only black woman in the room on Project Greenlight.
Surprise! Shocker.
Jason Bourne. Really?
Yeah. Famous. I forget what her name was, but...
she's one of the producers of Dear White People, among other
things. Effie Brown.
She's a professional movie maker, yes.
So Matt got into super hot Twitter hell. In fact, Damon Splainin'. Shout out to Jamie, Black Damon Girl Splainin'. Nerds. He's got that hashtag trending.
She is a fucking trendy hashtag machine. Yeah, she's amazing.
I guess this goes under the... Non-pology? I can't remember. We'll have to get the
category.
This is
a no-pology.
It's a no-pology?
Yeah, but,
no-pology. No-pology.
Matt Damon, it is his no-pology. Let me see if I can pull it up. Where is it? He said, my comments were part of a much broader conversation about diversity in Hollywood and the fundamental nature of Project Greenlight, which did not make the show. You didn't get the context, guys. I was talking about the other things. I am sorry that they offended some people, but... At the very least, I'm happy that they started a conversation about diversity in Hollywood. That is an ongoing conversation that we all should be having. So let's just break it down, first of all. You didn't hear anything. You didn't hear all the shit. They edited it. There's some context. I'm sorry you were offended.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that I started a conversation. No, you didn't. That's a very important one. We all should be having. I'm happy I did that.
Yeah. Is he, though? Preston Mitchell said in response, Matt Damon, you did not start a diversity conversation. Black people have been having it for a while, so just stop. And it's this thing, this progressive liberal bullshit. I have found them to be the most offensive racists lately. It's like insanity to me. Yeah. The cloak of superiority that they put on, thinking that they're not problematic as fuck. And it's really getting fucking old, quite frankly. And we're going to go into that in our next new segment, which we'll get to in a minute, about liberals. But the second comes from Stephen Amell, who plays Arrow on the TV show Arrow and also guest stars occasionally on The Flash as well. So he exchanged a bunch of tweets in response to the I Am Ahmed hashtag last week, where he people were talking about like how bad Texas is because it's happened in Texas, and we've seen multiple things come out of Texas. And he says, he tweeted out, stereotyping Texas isn't any better than stereotyping Ahmed, just so we're clear.
No, not really. We have these things called facts.
Yeah, but Texas is not
and there's this thing called the Google machine.
Yeah, you know exactly.
Those are the kind of people that when you're having some sort of like argument, they'll always pull out a black person having like a preference, a prejudice, or a bias against white people, which like I think as a black person that's like a safety like move, like just straight up having like a bias, like, you know, against like white people, like because we fucking kill a bunch of you guys, you know what I'm saying? Like that's not like, to me, I don't hold that, that's not a grudge I hold against black people, but all the time is white people like, see, that's racist, look at the dictionary definition, racist, having a preference against one, against a skin color, you're being racist, this group that's only for black people, racist, this thing that you only want black people at, racist. It's so absurd.
Yeah, so he literally then tweeted out, because people obviously were upset about this comment and the way he was talking to people about the situation, and he said, been unseasonably cold in Vancouver. Good thing we've been able to heat our condo with fake cyber rage. So then he belittled the people that were saying, like, dude, this is not cool.
Fake cyber rage?
So a fan of his... posted an 11-minute video. Her name is Jennifer Watley, and she listed, you know, she laid
Jennifer
pretty
white or black girl?
I don't know. I haven't seen the video, but she, you know, she specifically said that for a couple of reasons. She says, She says, it's been a couple of rough days in the Arrow fandom, has it not? I've been spending the past 10 and a half hours doing extra work, which I love, but all I could think of was a situation in the Arrow fandom, and I need to say something about it because I can't let it go because it hurts. It really hurts. And she really just said all the things that we all would say, just like, this is why it's problematic that you said it in the first place. This is why it's even more disturbing that you chose to meet people's very valid comments and criticism of you with snark and condescension. And, you know, you're better than that. That's not how you should treat people. And it's not right. And this is why. You know, she kind of just laid it all out. He then issued this full Facebook apology, wrote on Facebook, hey, Jennifer, thanks for taking the time. I know a lot of people wouldn't put themselves out there in front of a large audience to produce something so raw. I'm also appreciative because part of the reason this whole ordeal metastasizes anonymity. Not really. You're not anonymous, so that's not at all the case. You said you're fucked up shit when you knew everybody would know who you were, but okay.
Yeah, what's that about?
The other 99% of me commenting on a social issue / doubling down / saying I was going away and then doubling, tripling down again because I felt mistreated by a few headlines. Poor me, I know. This led to me poking the bear, and here we are. Now, I could go counterpoint on your video. You saying I don't care, that I don't get it, that I was simply equating two things when I explicitly stated that was not my intention. I don't want to do that, even though he just did that. I want to just mention that he doesn't want to do
Here's point one, two, three, and four. But I'm not going to do that.
Okay, because I'm dissecting this whole bullshit apology. I'm taking the high road after I already said all this stuff, but I'm going to take the high one.
You little.
I don't want to do that. I want to apologize. For a couple of reasons. First, just because. What?
First, just because.
Second, because I got all this money.
Thirdly, because my PR agent isn't here with me.
Pride gets in the way sometimes. So let's get rid of that.
Wow.
Convenient. After you.
I'm sorry if you were offended, found me trite or disingenuous. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Second, I made specific statements, but in a medium where people can't hear my tone of voice and the inability to be particular in tone made people that were in my corner, well, that's a weird thing to type, feel disrespected. Okay, so now you're blaming Twitter. Got it.
Yeah, you didn't get the tone of my tweet. It would be like, guys, comparing Texas to Hamas, like, totally the same thing.
So I'm sorry. I have a very, very large audience, humble brag, a high school education, and no safety net or filter in front of me. I'm an actor. I'm not a professor of sociology or an expert on the psychology of anyone who has to exist in any culture as a minority. What? I'm not an expert on religion or the history of particular regions. Quite simply, I should have left things to smarter people. What?
Or how about just not be a dick?
What? So again, I'm sorry that you're dumb. Okay.
Yeah.
Concurrently, the whole social media experiment is a two-way street. I come forward with no filter, and that has engendered me a lot of good faith. If that faith is jeopardized, well, I'd regret that any of this happened even more than I already do. You be well, Jennifer. And if anyone feels like Jennifer, then please consider this abnormally long paragraph penance for a few lousy days in an otherwise fruitful relationship. I'm sorry. And everything being equal, I'd really love to move on. P.S. I think your voice is lovely.
Stop fucking adding me. Stop coming to my mentions, y'all.
Don't mention anymore.
This is it. I wrote this letter.
So fuck you.
Stay out of my DMs.
Jesus.
So wow.
I said why sorry you were offended.
So here's the thing about apologize. This. Yeah, here's the thing about this whole apology that pissed me off the most is that people were actually giving this douchebag credit for this shit.
For that?
Yeah, yeah. Chris Fett from Insanity Report, he and I had an exchange where he was like, you know, this is in the right direction. No, Chris. I beg to differ. Nothing in that apology is in the right direction. Nothing. Exactly. There's not a single word of that apology that is appropriate.
Let's make it real clear.
Fuck?
There needs to be acknowledgement and accountability. There is neither.
None of those things.
Neither.
It's not me. Here's why I'm great. By the way, peace. I'm stupid. Deuces. I'm out. None of that sentence does any of it.
By the way, I'm stupid. Deuces. I'm out.
Like, what the fuck?
You're You're killing us.
Ridiculous. And so I have posted this anywhere there's somebody asked me about this apology and Stephen Amell. Fuck that guy. That's what I have to say about it. And I will continue to say that anywhere anybody asks me about it. Fuck that
guy. Are we
going to
still watch the show, though? Because we like show.
I'll decide when it comes back. I'm not sure about it, quite frankly. Wow. Because you know why? Because fuck that guy.
Wow.
Boycott Sals.
Fuck that guy.
Boycott Sals.
So somebody that came to the table and actually gave a what I would consider to be a quite good apology, and he better had because he knew what the fuck was good for him, was one Michael B. Jordan. So there were some reports that he sent a Snapchat to fans saying that he believes that, quote, all lives matter. And he also gave an interview with GQ where he gave some troubling quotes about women, referring to them as females multiple times in the article. And I'm going to try and see. I should have pulled up the actual quotes that he put in there because it was pretty pretty bad. He says that oh no, that's not it. That he also talked about if he didn't date, if he was dating
oh yeah, the Jenner,
the Kylie Jenner. Or Kylie Jenner one, yeah.
Yeah,
he didn't have a good week, which was not, you know,
no
it was a bad, it was definitely bad.
Yeah, a lot of the wrong kind of press.
It was not good press for Michael B. Jordan, who I think up until this point has been kind of like one of those like squeaky clean, you know, you can count on him type of dudes. To me anyways, his press has been really positive. I think people always say what a great guy he is and how, you know, he's so talented and, you know, all of those good things. I mean, he would start in Fruitvale Station and was just in that horrible Fantastic Four.
Right. It's going to come up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so what was his apology? It was good, right?
So, yeah, so he apologized, and here's his apology. He wrote an open letter, and they posted it on Essence Magazine. He says, I've been a professional actor for most of my life, but being regarded as a leading man is new to me and has taken some getting used to. Recently, I had the opportunity to be featured on the cover of one of my favorite magazines. In the interview, several points that I shared were communicated in ways that do not reflect my true feelings or opinions. In addition, there were reports written about me elsewhere that simply weren't true. I'd like to set the record straight. Okay, here we go. First and foremost, I believe that Black Lives Matter. Unequivocally and without exception, I've never said, written, Snapchatted, tweeted, Instagrammed, or implied anything to the contrary. Any report that states otherwise is a complete fabrication. I portrayed Oscar Grant in my first leading role in a feature film for Fruitvale Station. I'm a founding member of the Blackout for Human Rights Network. I gave a speech just a few months ago on the importance of the Black Lives Matter movement at the BET Awards. It is frustrating to see a false claim stirred up on social media, which has caused my supporters to question where I stand on this crucial issue, but I'm confident that my history and continued engagement with my community will speak louder than unfounded rumors. Okay.
Very good.
I love all of that. Yep. Just
dig that.
Set the record straight. Just boom, unequivocal.
This is my statement on that, and that's it. All right, here we go. Secondly, it is challenging to have a nuanced conversation about race and Hollywood, period. The sensitive subject becomes even more complicated when you're dealing with sound bites and articles. A simple idea or opinion can be abbreviated and distorted as it is communicated to readers out of context. Allow me to be clear about my ideas on roles traditionally reserved for white actors. My goal is for my choices and opportunities, as well as those of my fellow actors and actresses of color, to be predicated on our talent, ability, and passion, and not on false notions about what color an artist must be to play certain roles. I've had the honor to portray black characters written and directed by black filmmakers, a privilege that too few actors of color enjoy because of the challenges of black artistry and access behind the camera. But in addition to those wonderful roles, I also want to have the option to play all kinds of parts with no door closed to actors and actresses like myself. Okay.
All right.
Another record setting straight. All right. Sounds,
I see with that.
Sounds good. I like all this stuff, Michael. All right, let's see. Are you going to bring it home? Here we go. Lastly, my fans who are women mean the world to me. This is especially true of black women who as a group have supported my work long before the industry knew my name. I deeply regret and am ashamed that I said anything to disappoint or disparage them. I apologize with my whole heart for referring to women in the way that I did. The word female used in the manner that I did is dismissive and strips women of their humanity. It is a slang term that guys sometimes use to sound slick and cool coming up, but words have power, and I realize now more than ever that this careless language is dehumanizing, inappropriate, and immature. I'm a better man than that. This reference to women will not come out of my mouth publicly or in private again.
Wow. Whoa. That's a fucking apology. Okay. That was, he acknowledged it.
Okay.
I said these things. B, they hurt you in this very specific way. C, they'll never cross my lips again.
But the most important part of that is that he didn't just say women. He was like, nah, black women. He spoke specifically to the people that he knew were harmed by that word. Because when you say female, you're not referring to a white woman. Okay. That is a fact. And that part of it to me is like, critical to that accountability that we were talking about, because you have to be accountable to the right people when you make an apology and you want it to actually count. And to me, that piece of that sentence, this is especially true of black women. It was just so.
And, you know, he said earlier that I know my actions will do more than my words. And so he's already stated that. So here in this apology, there's no contingent on this or this. Nope. There's no that. It's offered without recourse or reprise or expectation on his part. He doesn't say, oh, I demand this or that. He's going to apologize. He's going to go out and he's going to change his ways.
Yep.
And I would say that's not only a good lesson for like apology, but for just like white people in particular. Michael said earlier that, you know, it's a difficult conversation about race. I say repeatedly as a white person, our lot in this, you know, a discussion about race, about, you know, trying to be an advocate for justice, trying to be, you know, in solidarity with the black movement for black liberation, all of those things. If you're on that path, your lot is to fuck up and stumble and trip over yourself again and again and again and again. So you got to get used to it.
Here he says, says something else. He finishes up this way, which I think is even more brilliant. He says, although some of what I said was taken out of context, I take full responsibility for the interview and I apologize for the hurt and confusion it has caused. This has been an important lesson for me. I humbly ask my fans to grow with me as I learn more about myself and this industry. Thank you. Now, the part of that that's critical is where he says, I take full responsibility for the interview in this part, and I apologize for the hurt and confusion it has caused. Not for those who felt offended. Right. Not for those who might have been. No. He said he acknowledges that the hurt and confusion happened, and that is what he is apologizing for.
And he created it.
He created it.
And he's sorry for that. Absolutely. That's an actual apology.
He recognizes that it happened.
And you know, the other thing, too, very good lessons here as well. As soon as what he did there, taking full accountability and acknowledgement and the responsibility for everything, it becomes increasingly less likely you are going to be able to do that and save face if you double and triple down on your fucking bullshit.
Exactly, yeah, because at this point it's over.
Yeah, as soon as you double and triple down, it's like, well, wait a minute, you're apologizing for all this. What? So now you're going to apologize for being a jackass when you double down and a jackass when you belittle the people? You can't really do that. It's like, once you double down, it fucking like, it frames the way that you're able to save face afterwards. And the only way to do that is these bullshit non-apologies.
Right.
Yeah. And you're not going to get away with that as a white person trying to do work in this environment is A, double downing, and then B, trying to like save face. You have to really be like, okay, wait a minute. I fucked up. Let me, even if you don't know how, just be like, you know what? You've told me I fucked up. I'm going to appreciate that. And I'm going to stop what I'm doing and process that right now. And however long it takes you to process it and be like, okay, I see how I fucked up. And, you know, you move on. I've fucked up. I've made plenty of mistakes. It's like, oh shit. You know, thanks for pointing that out. I'll never do that again.
The biggest thing about that though is there is a lot of respect you gain in doing that and being humble like that and saying, you know what? I screwed up. I'm going to try to do better.
Sure.
Because like you said, when you keep doubling down like that, it really shows that, well, you really don't care. You care more about being right and saving face as opposed to saying, you know what, I screwed up, I'm going to try to do better. I think you get a lot more respect from people that you may affect and even people that you don't affect when you acknowledge that and say, I'm going to try to do better and move on.
Yeah, it's the truth. It's the truth. And when I say I fucked up, I fucked up like bad. I had to go face to face and was like, oh, it was like one of the hardest things I ever had to do, but I'm glad I did. I'm a better person for it.
Yeah, so I will say that definitely made an impression, because I'm telling you, all my black girl circle, Ray Sani, who's a comedian writer, she also is host of the It's About Us podcast, Ray Sani, she put on Facebook, she used the like relationship thing, and she said that her and Michael B. Jordan broke up. their relationship was over. She ended their relationship officially on Facebook. And then this apology came out, and she said that, and then she posted again that they're back together. Literally. She broke up. She was like, she read this article and she was like, fuck you. This breaks my heart, but we broke up. And this apology actually allowed her to go back in and say they got back together. They're not engaged again because their engagement was broken on the first time, but they're dating again. So, and she's also going to see Creed and Fab in the but I also want to interest me. We got two white guys who definitely should be apologizing 100% and don't apologize at all, and a black man who humbles himself before his sisters and does the right thing. So good on you, Michael B. Jordan. I too will be going to see Creed. And that's a good segue to our other new segment.
Yeah. God damn it. Fucking white people.
It's just always with the white people, man. So two white dudes in Brooklyn got into an argument on the street, and we'll just let the audio because we caught it on film.
Back the fuck off.
You see this stance? Hey, he went old school.
So the glove went like this?
He went old school like this.
Don't fucking come at me. I'll kill you. What?
Oh my God.
You're messing with the wrong guy. I fight for a living. You're messing with the wrong guy. Excuse you. Don't push. No, you push your stroller into people. Your baby could get hurt. Your baby could get hurt. You just... I think my baby's like you, baby. You're new in the neighborhood. I've been in this neighborhood. The only reason white people like you are living here is because I settled this fucking neighborhood for you.
Oh my God.
Thank you, white guy.
Don't put my legs. You're a sick fuck. White privilege, white fucking privilege. You pushed your stroller right into me, and all I said was excuse you. And then he said, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, white trash.
Fucking called her white trash.
Fucking white trash.
Oh my God.
Yo, dude, that was the commentary. It was from the white dude filming the thing. Thanks,
that was
white
a black
guy.
Dude's clearly a black
dude. White guy.
Thanks, white guy.
So he
settled this neighborhood so you could live here.
Yeah, he's literally been referred to.
I've eradicated all the natives and dangerous people so you may have a life here in my illustrious neighborhood.
Call him by his name. Christopher Columbus of Brooklyn.
Christopher Columbus of Brooklyn, exactly.
Actually, he won't give his name. He just goes by B.A. He did a follow-up interview with the Gothamist. He's 46 years old, and he invited them into his modest Fort Greene studio that he shares with his 10-year-old pit bull. Okay. He's a self-employed personal trainer and a native New Yorker. He was born in St. Vincent's. That's a hospital in New York, in case you don't know. He grew up on West 4th Street, and he's been there since day one. He says he has a temper, and when he starts seeing red, it's like he loses it. He admits to that. He loses it. He starts screaming.
That's a good...
He did have a nasty gash on his leg, and they have a picture of it. It's pretty bad from the stroller, I have to say. Like, they actually physically, like, drew significant blood. It's pretty big, and it's very deep on his leg. And I could see you being, like, really shitty. And what happened was, they didn't show this in the thing, but, you know, the thing that we do in New Yorkers and probably all black people, like, the person did this, cut his leg, and he turned around, and he said, excuse you. That's what he said to them. That was the start of this exchange. They cut his leg and he was like, excuse you, like, bitch, what the fuck? That was all he was going to say. The woman turned around and started screaming, fuck you. Who do you think you are to him when he said that to
her? Wow.
And that's what started. And then the guy started screaming, fuck you, and came over like he was going to fight the guy. That's how the altercation started, which I think is interesting because he's clearly a New Yorker, because that's totally what you say. Like, excuse you, like, it's an attitude, but you deserve the fucking attitude because you just bumped into me. What the fuck? It happens. It's a goddamn city. And again, he was physically cut by this stroller. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what started it, but it's pretty interesting.
You'll have to put the video link up for fans of the show. Sure. Because if you watch the video, dude is standing, there's a cop.
It's not a cop. It's a security guard for the building.
Okay. Well, there's a security guard, quasi, legal looking official. This dude is just all over. He's pointing his finger at this chick's face. He's like jumping up and down. Yeah. He's not just like
really aggressive.
Yeah. He's like, I'll fucking kill you. I'll punch you right now with one punch. Like, he's pretty angry.
Yeah. So he says
to settle Brooklyn and then start crying white privilege.
It's yes, he says that he's about
point his finger. White privilege. White privilege.
Yes, white privilege.
Is that how that works?
Yeah. And so he said he was. You know, he's the people are judging him based on the video, but that he, you know, grew up poor and blah 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 and la la la. He had a bunch of boyfriends of his mother. Some of them abused him and this, that, the other. His
one of my friends is black.
And so when Gotham has said that he was,
I know Carl,
right? That he was judging the man in the video the same way the internet is judging him now. He says, "Yeah, I don't know his story, but I did see his pink Izod, his glasses. I know the story of the Bell Tower, which is the Bell Tower Lofts, where." The man's shirt says that it's on the lapel there, and he says, this is his quote: "Oh, you live in the Bell Tower, you're walking around in your polo shirt, you're pushing your stroller into me, you don't say excuse me, you must be some kind of transplanted white trash. They don't think they are because they got money, but they act like it, you know," end quote.
Oh, why don't white trash?
Double down on the white trash.
Yeah.
I know, because when shit like this happens, we as a group of white people often get accused of being the same and like that and a monolith. And you know, we have to take responsibility and denounce these white actions as white people. That happens all the time. The media's like, when's white guy going to say something? This white dude in New York called another person white trash with a stroller. I mean, come on. That's all you people do. And so I'm going to say, I apologize. I'm sorry. You know, we're going to do better with the strollers and the finger pointing privilege calling out.
Why does this happen?
Fuck yous on the street. It's our culture. It's a lack of. In fact, it's not a lack of. It's too much mayonnaise and deviled eggs.
Mm-hmm. So also white people this week. White peopling.
white peopling.
Yes, because white people will white
damn
people.
It. Fucking white people.
they. Well, there are two things that came across my purview about school zoning and white people trying to keep black people away from their precious white children. So the first thing was in New York City in Brooklyn Heights, 100 anxious parents gathered in the auditorium to discuss the proposed rezoning of two public elementary schools serving Brooklyn Heights, Dumbo, Vinegar Hill, and Fort Greene. Now, those who don't know, Brooklyn is undergoing probably one of the largest gentrification processes that I've ever witnessed in my entire lifetime. It's really disturbing being someone who was born and grew up in Brooklyn.
It's bonkers.
It's really some. I don't even know how to describe it other than to say that I go to a place that I lived at and grew up for 18 years and don't recognize most of it. Like, and I don't mean it in a like kind of like
the building
wistful way. I mean, literally, I do not recognize.
No, there's a je ne sais quoi, right? There's some sort of can't put your thumb on it feel that parts of New York have, right? When you're in Manhattan or the East, you know, Village or what's the other place we go to sometimes with the place with round windows and the High Line, and you know, there's just different
Chelsea.
There's different feels, and Brooklyn, where you grew up and lived, Flatbush, has a feel.
Yeah.
And that feel is being sanitized.
Just it's
being,
washed it's being removed. Away. It's being disturbing. Removed. So anyway, so the rezoning would require predominantly white upper middle class bursting at the seams, PS8, to move Dumbo and Vinegar Hill families, one of those four areas that I mentioned, to PS307, a school that is currently under capacity and predominantly serves African-American residents of the New York City Housing Authority run Farragut Housing. So we're talking about four areas, and in one of those areas there's a large housing development. And so all the schools there, we're talking about elementary schools in this case, are basically on racial divides. So the white kids go to this school, the black kids go to this school. And right now, because of this gentrification situation happening, there's way more white kids than there used to be. And so the white school is completely overcome, and at the same time, the black schools are lowering in enrollment because black people can't afford to live in Brooklyn anymore.
Right.
Quite frankly, that's just a fact. That's what's happening. So black and Hispanic students currently represent 34% of PS8 student body. Again, this is in New York City, 34%, while 307 is 95% minority. So these are all walking distance between each other schools, and this is the fact. So under the proposed rezoning, the percentages are going to shift so that 25 to 35 of the students would be minority in one school and 55 to 65 in the other. So we'd be kind of balancing things out. We know this is the spokeswoman for the open church door. She says, we know some white people don't want to go to PS 2 307 because it's predominantly black, and some of the black people don't want this influx of white people coming in to do it so shockingly and quickly. Let's stop the present plan and fight for the time to create a new plan.
Wow.
Yeah. So all of these parents got together to be like, nope, this can't happen. A Dunbar father says, I'm disappointed that you haven't involved my community. Why is redrawing a few lines in a map a stand-in for fixing a severely underperforming school? Because that's what the numbers show for 307. How is sending Dumbo and Vinegar Hill students to 307 going to fix its problem? If it hasn't happened yet, why would it happen next year? According to New York Times, PS8's third graders had a pass rate of 86% on the state test in 2012, with 1% performing below standards. And at PS307, the pass rate was down to only 16%, and 37% of the students were below standard. Okay. So they're all complaining. One of them says that the co-president of 307's PTA says, we have a pre-kindergarten and kindergarten students learning Mandarin three times a week. We have our second graders learning to play violin. We have a health and wellness program. But you just look at outward appearance, you see the Farragut houses. So, yeah. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And really puts into perspective, like, in reality, the only thing that makes schools better is integration. This is the only exactly. thing that has been proven. You know, this idea where he says, well, I don't see how it's going to change. Well, because white people are going to be there. And that means now we're going to, because of you, sir, because of your determined focus and your increased power in our society, your child being in that school is going to make it perform better. Not because your child is better, but because our society has deemed your child worthy of more.
No, because as a parent, you have power and influence to make that happen.
That's
the point, though.
That's why. Exactly. Our society has decided that his child is important because he is important in our society. So for a white man to actually have that statement come out of his mouth, how's that going to change anything if it hasn't changed already? You know what hasn't changed already? Because you didn't give a shit that school was underperforming. Until when? Until your fucking kid had to go there. Because last week you didn't give a shit about those kids, and you were fine that they had only 16% passing. You didn't care. And now you do care. That's what the fucking difference is. It's disturbing to have him say these things and not even see how ridiculous they sound. He's like proving his own point. Well, what's going to change? You talking about it has already changed, motherfucker. How about that?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about before, like the ways of being racist and shit. That people are like, well, I don't use the N-word. I'm not racist at all. But, oh, no, my kid, I'm going to pull my kid out unless he goes to an all-white school. I'm only going to live in a community that's all white. And it's not like they don't think of that as a racist choice. It's just, oh, that's just my preference. Or right. It's just a better school district. Right. Or it's just easier.
Right. So the other thing that came across my purview was This American Life episode from actually quite a few weeks ago, from July 31st.
Ooh, oh, my goodness.
Called Did you go back we and all listen live to that, with. Dude?
Well, Carl must have listened to it already. I mean, AIDS from St. Louis, so of course he would have been interested. And I'm pretty sure he listens to This American Life.
Shit was fucking heartbreaking,
well.
Man.
So the description for the episode is, right now all sorts of people are trying to rethink and reinvent education to get poor minority kids performing as well as white kids. But there's one thing nobody tries anymore, despite lots of evidence that it works: desegregation. Nicole Hannah Jones looks at a district that not long ago accidentally launched desegregation program. This is a two-part series. And so this is from part one. And so basically, in the St. Louis school district, what happened was school got completely, what do they call it? Classified.
It lost its accreditation.
Lost their accreditation.
Right, it lost their accreditation.
It's not just any school district. It was the same school district that Mike Brown had graduated from. Is it Warren? What's the name of the district?
I don't remember the name of the district. But
I don't remember.
Anyways, excuse me. Once it gets deaccredited, the students are, by law in St. Louis County and in Missouri, able to go to an accredited school outside of their district, and the school has to pay for this busing to occur. And it's just one of the things that kicks into place. You know, you put these rules in. Once you're not accredited anymore, all these things are able to happen now. And so one of these things is this. And they chose a school in another area to do that in. And so I wanted to play
Nicole Hannah
a little bit from
this cast. To get her teenage daughter.
The meeting, because there was a school meeting, of course, to talk about this.
How kids, nearly all white.
Okay, I'm going to go a little bit back, so you guys, and I'll play just a few minutes of this so people can get context.
I was just excited. I think Maria and I got together and just did.
So this is a mom in St. Louis saying, like, okay, great, my student can now go to this school, this predominantly white school. That's a good school.
We were so happy.
Y'all are so cute right now, though. She's like looking at
and
you.
And that's the student.
Eyes. It's so cute.
Under the law, while Normandy students can enroll in any nearby accredited district, Normandy has to provide transportation to just one. Normandy officials chose a district called Francis Howell. Francis Howell was 85% white. It sits across a river in another county, roughly 30 miles away from Normandy. One of the best districts in Missouri was just 5 miles away. It would have been very easy for Normandy students to get there. Why not send them there? Well, if you don't want students to leave your district, one way to keep them is to make leaving inconvenient. Make them ride a long distance to school every day. Though Normandy officials deny that's why they chose Francis Howell. Douglas Carr was a teacher in the Normandy district. He says when they first heard about the transfer option on the news, a lot of the Normandy teachers didn't expect many kids would take it.
Well, I thought, honestly, I thought, well, how many parents are going to want to get their kids up early and send them to a school 30 miles down the highway? That, to me, was a little extreme.
1,000.
30
That's
miles.
How many kids wanted to do
1,000, y'all.
That fall, fully one quarter of Normandy students chose the evacuation plan the law created, even though many of them would have to get on a bus at 5 o'clock in the morning and travel a good 30 miles away.
I'm going to stop here for 1 second just to, like, put that in perspective of a child being like, yep, my school is so shitty, and I am determined to get a good education for myself. This is what I'm willing to do.
And look at
I like to see a white student, average white student in this country, be given that same choice and make that choice. Fuck you.
Not one quarter of them.
Yeah.
Not
no
a thousand.
No way.
Not a thousand. No fucking
no
way.
No fucking way.
And the district, too, just like they deny that the 30-mile difference was, you know, one way to keep
Come
kids
on,
from executing the
Come
evacuation.
They went to a different county.
That's
Come
some
on.
Bullshit.
Exactly.
Come on.
Straight bullshit.
Do you know much about these two schools and the school districts or the areas? Can you give us some insight in that, Carl?
Yeah. So Francis Howell, when I was there, was a pretty affluent area. And like they said on the podcast, Normandy was in bad shape. So I think what she's talking about is relatively new. But so when I was in a school in the 80s, I went to kind of – they call it the county, but I lived in the suburbs. It was Manchester, and I went to a school called Parkway South. And I remember, you know, having – or seeing some of the kids being bussed in, and I remember, you know – I know they had to get up like at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to catch a 6 o'clock bus to get out to West County, as they call it, to make class at 7 or 8 o'clock. And then going home on the back end of that, they get home at 5. And if they played sports, it was like 7 or 8 o'clock when they
For
got
real?
Home in the
wow.
evening.
Mm.
But just to get a better education. And, you know, and I don't know if you're going to play it, but that, I saw that you posted or made a comment on this on Facebook. But when I heard that town hall meeting,
yeah, I am going to play it. So let's hold those comments for a minute.
Okay. Before the town hall meeting, just to even get a little more clarity, I don't know if it was this area specific or Missouri or wider nationally, but 1 in 2 black students goes to an unaccredited school, right? So half of the black student population is attending an unaccredited school,
right.
Whereas on the white side, it's 1 in 25. So 4% versus 50%.
I just don't understand why they don't just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, Drew.
Exactly.
Come on.
You know, and just the score to do the accreditation is on 140 points. And the high school that Mike Brown matriculated from, they went through some of the things like, you know, AP score 0, you know, English score 0, this score 0. His high school failed, they're unaccredited, getting 10 out of 140 points.
Yeah. All right.
10.
Let's keep going here.
Kids wanted to do that. That fall, fully one quarter of Normandy students chose the evacuation plan the law created, even though many of them would have to get on a bus at 5 o'clock in the morning and travel a good 30 miles away. The word integration does not appear in Missouri's transfer law. When the law was passed, no one thought an entire district would lose accreditation. Integration was not the law's intent, but the Normandy kids are almost all black, the Francis Howell kids nearly all white. And that is how Missouri accidentally launched a school integration plan in what was an unfashionably late year for such a thing, 2013.
2 years ago, y'all.
Yep.
Two school years ago.
Though Normandy chose to provide free transportation to the Francis Howe School District, Francis Howe wasn't part of that decision. By law, they had no say in the matter. So, a week after the announcement that Normandy would bus kids to Francis Howe, officials there held a town meeting to talk about it. Nidra and Maria decided to go.
Okay, so I'm just going to stop here and just prepare people. There is a trigger warning here. You will be very upset by what you're going to hear happen at this town hall meeting. Severe white fragility, some racist comments.
Anti-blackness.
Anti-blackness on fleek, like bad. Okay, so I'm just going to say that before we play the...
That night, it was a traffic jam getting there. I mean, because it was packed, you know, to get up in this town hall meeting. You would think it was a celebrity in town or something. That's how crowded it was.
They parked and walked in. Maria looked around, surveying the gym, a sea of 3,000 mostly white faces.
Bleachers on each side, those were filled. Then you had chairs that were in two columns, and people were filling up those seats to say something in the mic.
Hello, my name is Rebecca, and I have children in the district, and I'm concerned.
St. Louis Public Radio recorded the meeting. One by one, parents tick off concerns. There are questions about class sizes, money, how this will affect special ed, fire safety.
My question is, when a child who is coming from an underperforming school with low test scores comes into a math class at Francis Howe, how will they ever possibly cope?
Once Normandy comes in here, will that lower our accreditation?
That got a fucking applause.
A woman said she was an education professor and warned Francis Howe officials not to be naive about the type of students they'd be receiving.
So I'm hoping that their discipline records come with them, like their health records come with them.
That got a fucking
applause.
The elected school board was sitting at tables in the front of the gym. Now and then, one of them jumped in.
I just want to remind everybody that this timeline, nor this solution, are solutions that Francis Howe would have chosen either. We're doing the best that we can. We found, you know, it hasn't even been 2 weeks ago that we've been notified. We did find out yesterday that those student scores will be become our scores. So...
Listen to
one mother asked why residents did not get to vote on letting in Normandy kids like they vote on public
this
transportation.
Bitch.
Years ago, when the MetroLink was being very popular, St. Charles County...
That's a very important point.
...whether or not we wanted the MetroLink to come across into our community. And we said no. And the reason we said no is because we don't want the different areas...
Now, see how she stopped herself there?
Because she was about
she
to say
swallowed it. A fucking word, yo. She Ooh, swallowed a word.
I'm going to play her again.
She choked something down.
Residents did not get to vote on letting in Normandy kids like they vote on public transportation.
We'll listen to this woman.
Years ago, when the MetroLink was being very popular, St. Charles County put to a vote whether or not we wanted the MetroLink to come across into our community. And we said no. And the reason we said no is because we don't want... The different areas, I'm going to probably be very kind, coming across on our side of the bridge, bringing with it everything that we're fighting today against.
That was her being so, very nice. Everybody.
Bringing with it?
So, a little bit of background.
Did she just say
so
bringing with it?
Yeah.
For real? I'm sorry. Bringing with it.
This is the when I wrote my thing on Facebook because I was like,
bringing with
I got
it?
So incensed when I heard this woman talk. Go ahead, Carl.
So, the MetroLink is equivalent to like not really a subway, but almost like an L in St. Louis. So it goes right from, I think, somewhere in East St. Louis across to the Illinois or to the Missouri side, and it may stop in maybe Clayton or somewhere like that.
Okay.
So I remember when they built it, you know, as you get further west, that's where more of the affluent people live, and St. Charles is across a bridge even further west. And there was a whole vote, like she said, a whole vote, because they didn't want the MetroLink to go that far west, like she said, into those affluent areas across the bridge. So it literally stops you know, right before it starts to get to some of the affluent areas.
So they're like,
of,
not only do we not want you black people over here, but we're going to make it difficult for you to get here.
Yeah.
And we're going to make sure you don't get out here.
The only way to be out here is to have a car.
That's what I mean by make it impossible for you to get here.
And now as the future moves on and forward, and, you know, there are communities that think, wow, there's too many cars. Wouldn't it be great if we could not have a car and we could get in downtown? Oh, the MetroLink doesn't go far. Shoot.
They would never think that. Drew, you are approaching this as if it's not Missouri. I'm sorry, Carl. I know you're from there and everything, but for real, Missouri, people think it's a northern state, and it's not. And I'm not even saying northern states are great, but I'm just saying that, like, literally every horrible outcome of slavery and Jim Crow and lack of civil rights for black people is, like, built into every nook, aspect, and cranny of everything that is Missouri. And it's really true. Like, honest to goodness, whenever I meet activists and organizers from there, it's like, it's no surprise at all that shit popped off in Ferguson, Missouri. I can tell you that for sure. Like, there's, like, for real, this is a prime example of why shit would pop off in Ferguson, Missouri, and lots of other places in Missouri as well. So whenever a lot of times people will talk about things that happened in Missouri and they act like it's like, oh yeah, you could just do XYZ. It's like, nah, in Missouri, you can't just do XYZ.
No.
You can't. You cannot just do XYZ because shit doesn't function that way. You can't add one and one equal two in Missouri. It doesn't work that way. At all. They will spite themselves monetarily just to keep black people down in Missouri.
Oh yeah.
Actively.
It's ridiculous. You know, growing up in an environment, like I said before, coming out of it and living somewhere else now, you can see just how awful Missouri is. And I tell people all the time, I dread going back to St. Louis. Obviously, I want to see my parents, but that's the only reason I go back. There's no other reason for me to go back to Missouri. It's just not a fun place to be. But Leslie said, they will spite themselves financially to keep those two groups apart.
Yep.
To keep the black people from the white people, whether it's limiting, Jesus. You know, accessibility of public transportation, whether it's zoning, you name it. I mean, it is blatant.
Blatant.
Anti-blackness on fleek.
It's really out of control. Okay, so let's hear the rest of this. Whew.
A mother named Beth Sarami approaches the microphone.
This is what I want to know from you. In 1 month, I send my 3 small children to you, and I want to know, is there going to be metal detectors? Because...
That's what she needs to know. It's important.
I'm no
it's important.
Expert. I'm not you guys. I don't have an accreditation, but I've read. I've read. So we're not talking about the Normandy School District losing their accreditation because of their buildings or their structures or their teachers. We are talking about violent behavior that is coming in with my first grader, my third grader, and my middle schooler that I'm very worried about. And I want to know, you have no choice like me.
Jesus.
I want to know where the metal detectors are going to be, and I want to know where your drug-sniffing dogs are going to be. And I want, this is what I want. I want the same security that Normandy gets when they walk through their school door. And I want it here. And I want that security before my children walk into Francis Howell. Because I shopped for a school district. I deserve to not have to worry about my children getting stabbed or taking a drug or getting robbed. Because that's the issue.
To be clear, Normandy did not lose its accreditation because of violence. It's easy to judge these parents, but I think part of what makes this scene so startling is that we rarely fight these battles anymore. The reaction to large numbers of black children moving into white schools would probably sound no different in New York or Chicago or Boston.
Now, we just read that this exact situation is happening in New York City, in Brooklyn, New York, and the same reaction that you can see it play out exactly, proving this reporter's words quite prophetic.
It's just that in most of the country, no one is even trying. These parents don't want to try either. So one of them offered a helpful solution.
You're absolutely right. We have to do this. We have to follow the laws. We don't have to like it, and we don't have to make it easy. Has anyone considered changing our school start times? Moving start times up 20 minutes, maybe 40 minutes? Making it a little less appealing?
Oh, my Christ.
Literally, Drew. I don't think you really were listening to this when I was listening to it.
I was working. Fuck, you were...
So I, I listened to it probably a couple weeks ago. I usually listen to it after I leave the listen to podcast on the way to work from the gym. And when I heard that specific stretch of the podcast, I literally started to tear up. And I mean, it obviously, you know, you get angry about it, but it's more so, you know, you hear the conversation with the young lady and her mom and how excited about she, how excited she is.
So excited.
To have the opportunity
to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go learn at this school.
The opportunity. And to hear all this kind of prejudgment before they even see anybody.
Anyone.
I mean, they're already behind the eight ball.
And Carl, you sent that.
And they're listening. Let me just set the scene too. Yeah, those two people, the mom and the daughter, who are so excited to go to this school, so excited.
Had to listen to all this shit.
They had to sit there and listen to this shit. Yeah. And more.
The article you shared about the young woman on campus who's Indian, right, of Indian descent, and someone yelled some horrible things at her out a window, and she kind of wrote back on Facebook. And the thing that was so she got a big response, and the piece that she took away and you tweeted was that for her, it was a very stark realization that so people apologize once they realize that she was like the student body president. They're like, oh, you know, we're sorry. And what struck her was that, like, oh, when they saw me from afar, I was just some, like, you know, horrible thing that they could call names at. But once they knew who I was, it was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And she wrote, oh, it's because the first thing they think of you is subhuman when they see you.
Of course.
And in the not in the same sense, but, you know, all of these statements and these emotions, it's coming from a place because those white people and vast stretches of white people are conditioned to not think of and see and have emotional responses to black people as human at the same level. It's literally, it's like, it's disgusting. It's pervasive. Like, they've done experiments where they have patients on film getting shots and you know, saying ooh and saying how much this hurts, and they have white and black skin, white shots, you know, people, this and that, all combinations, and white people have literally less emotional response, like a significantly less emotional response to a black person being injured. And it's like, that's why you hear all these like black brutes and these Hulk and you know, he was an animal, all this horrible shit, because that's the conditioned feeling and thinking, and you're seeing it outplay in New York, and she's right, in any state, because people are white.
It was terrible. Not only just hearing that, knowing, you know, this is how they view these kids and potentially me as well, but, you know, as I think about when I was in high school and how the kids that were bused in, how they were treated by the white students that lived in that area. I mean, there was a clear line in the sand. So for me, obviously, I did live right next to the high school, so I walked to school, but I had kind of had a unique perspective, because I could kind of see how the white students were treating the kids that were bused in, and I could obviously kind of assimilate it and relate to the kids that were bused in, because obviously we're black. But I mean, that really affected me more than I thought it would as I heard that, because it brought back so many memories, so many emotions, and seeing the fights and, you know, having conversations with some of the students that were bused in. And I mean, it just really, really hurt me to hear how those parents talk about kids that they haven't even met. You know, they're going to stab my kids. They're going to have drugs. They're stupid. They're going to, I mean, that really takes its toll. That was really hard to listen to when I heard it the first time.
And it's a version and a form of hoarding, right? I've mentioned that before, we talked about the show, like white opportunity hoarding. Like, that one girl got a job from her mom. Like, there's a lot of like opportunity hoarding that white people don't think of, we don't think of as decidedly bad. But in fact, society says, like, oh, if you're hoarding opportunities for your kids, that's a good thing. Like, you know, oh, you're just doing what every parent would do. Like, you know, do the best you can for your kid and get your kid. The woman said, I deserve, you know, I shopped
she
around
shops
for
around.
School to, I deserve.
And even her turn of phrase, what I want, I want. She said the phrase, I want, like 15 times.
Yeah.
So,
but that's not thought of. I'm just being, again, like, you and I, all of us sitting here looking at this from a racial perspective, like, wow, you know, on the other end of that, that's a horrible way of saying and thinking and being. But a lot of white people are like, well, she's just, you know, it's her school. I understand. And she's fighting.
Yeah,
what
it
she
goes
wants.
Back to what we talked about before. She's not racist. She didn't say the
right,
N word.
Right.
She's not racist.
Right.
She just wants the best for her kids.
Right.
So, Mariah, the student, she says to her mom, she kind of wants to go down, Maria, she wants to go down and she wants to say something when she hears all this stuff going on. And she changes her mind because she gets down there and she's
the opportunities. And now we're open to them. And now you want to be all mean talking about you're afraid of how big the class is going to be, the violence in the schools. And so
that's what she planned to say.
So I had to walk out, go to the big gym, and we were standing by the door. Me and my mom were walking towards the aisle, and I had hesitated. I didn't even get halfway to the microphone because of what the parents were saying. I stopped the second to last row of chairs because I did not want to say anything anymore. And then this lady, I don't remember who she was. She was like, I'll hold your hand. Cause I kind of started getting a little teary eyed, but I couldn't do it.
Nitra saw her daughter freeze. She said she thought about Ruby Bridges, the first black child to attend an all-white elementary school in the South. She's the little girl guarded by U.S. Marshals in the famous Norman Rockwell painting called The Problem We All Live With.
We're still dealing with that today. We're still dealing with that today. I kept telling myself, as if I was talking to those parents who were not embracing this decision, my child may be the doctor that saves your life one day. My child may be the lawyer that defends your child one day. How dare you?
Let's got one more part.
The conversation in the gym is taking place in one of the most segregated metropolitan areas in the country. Of course, there are poor white children in the St. Louis area, but they live in mostly middle-class areas, so they aren't attending schools as terrible as Normandy's. In St. Louis, poor white children are twice as likely to go to good schools than black children of all incomes.
Mm.
But race barely comes up that night, except when white parents insist it is not the issue.
We have both, my husband and I both, have worked and lived in underprivileged areas in our jobs. This is not a race issue. And I just want to say to, if she's even still here, the first woman who came up here and cried that it was a race issue, I'm sorry, that's her prejudice calling me a racist because my skin is white and I'm concerned about my children's education and safety.
Just stop for a second. Just pause that for a second.
It's not a race issue. This is a commitment to education issue.
Okay. She just said it right there, Carl, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
She's concerned about her kids. She's not, what she just said is like, I'm feeling attacked.
Yeah.
I'm not the racist.
Yeah.
You, this black girl up here crying, calling me this way because I'm white, you're the racist.
Right.
Because you're looking at me as white.
Mm-hmm.
That's obscene.
It's really obscene. The whole thing. And they go into a lot more, you know, because what these parents failed to say, you know, they go and they say, you know, I was here when they did desegregation in the 60s and 70s and great school districts crumbled because of it. No, they crumbled because you and your white parents and your white friends fucking left the schools and you left the districts because you didn't want your kids to be with black people. You didn't do desegregation. You fucking ran from it. So it's just ridiculous how these white people, and you could play any of those soundbites you want at this point, Drew, fail to recall what actually happened versus the way they've decided to rewrite what happened, and blaming victims of these horrible racist institutions for what happened when it's their fault in reality. It's fucking disgusting.
The thing that really stood out to me besides that portion was, and you probably don't have it, but they were interviewing, I don't know if he is a principal or an administrator at Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reporter asked if a black child has, how did she say
she
it?
She said, doesn't a black child have,
is there any chance for an equal opportunity,
yes,
of a black child
exactly
in the Normandy school district? And you know, this is not just a superintendent. It was the third superintendent in 3 years.
Yeah.
I think it was even in Missouri. I don't think it was just Normandy.
It was Missouri.
And she pressed him even further before that about the task at hand, right? That no district has ever been able to overcome this, you know, an entire district. No one school has maybe here or there, but not an entire district has been able to overcome this. And he's like, well, that doesn't absolve us from the, you know, the responsibility to try. And I was like, okay, well, so he's committed. But yeah, can a child in Missouri get an equal, can a black child get an equal education? And this is the superintendent of all schools. I don't know.
How is that acceptable?
Literally, I don't, you don't know. You don't know? That means no. It means you know the answer is no and you can't say
yeah,
no.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But yet nobody cares until your child has to go to school with black kids. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's an issue.
Yeah, in fact, I think the version of segregation we have now is hyper-segregation.
Yes.
And we see it in Grand Rapids. It's like you can drive two blocks and be like, whoa, I'm obviously in the segregated black area, and go two more blocks. Like, oop, there's the $500,000 homes. You know, it's like.
Literally. Exactly. Across the street.
Yeah.
It's disturbing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Yeah, I meant to. I had so many white people, I forgot to.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people. Hey. White people.
I just had too many.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
White people.
You are like so very white. Seriously, the whitest.
I got white people shit all over the place.
Oh, so much white people. Speaking of white people.
So I've talked before about being in interracial relationships and how I think as a white person that it's beholden upon me to be even more aware of race dynamics and issues, and I hope to think I've done a good job. I haven't always. It's growth. But here's an article from Everyday Feminism, and I couldn't remember if that was a website that was problematic in some way, but I don't recall. Like, see how some feminism magazines and sites are like mostly white feminist issues? I don't know about Everyday Feminism. Someone can maybe tell me if it's good or bad. But anyway, 7 things to remember if you're white dating a person of color. Because you know, when you're a white person in a racial relationship, there's the whole you know, white supremacy thing hanging around. Number one, be willing to talk about race. As a feminist, so the author is a woman. As a feminist and woman, they would never be in a relationship with someone who didn't feel comfortable talking about patriarchy. So as a person, white, same goes for race, it's okay to have conversations about white supremacy that make you uncomfortable. I mean, shouldn't you be uncomfortable with that shit? But generally, being aware of how race plays out and feeling very well versed in racial justice issues is important. Two, be willing to accept that sometimes you're not the go-to for race conversation.
Dun, dun, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
That's why safe spaces, affinity groups can be together with the presence of the oppressor, exist so that tough conversations can be had with fewer guards up so that you can communicate thousands of ideas in a single collective sigh. So you can cry together, blah, blah, blah. We've talked about affinity spaces here, but number three, familial relationships might not feel so familiar. It's never appropriate to stereotype people, but combinations of culture, nationality, and religion do play a huge role in how our families are structured. White people very rarely have to think about that because we're considered default Americans. What this means is that our understanding of American culture and American family is whitewashed to the point that we forget that not all family structures operate in the same way. And especially in romantic or sexual relationships where one, both, or all of you have close ties to your family, remembering that families function differently in culture to culture is a must. We've definitely we've talked
lots about
lot about on the show.
Yeah. Tons.
Yeah. White Christmas versus black Christmas.
Yeah.
People close to you are going to say racist shit. Speak up.
Yes.
It's kind of happen.
That's a litmus test.
Gotta say something.
You know, it is a kind of a litmus test.
For sure.
Yeah.
Number five is even better.
I'm going to knock on wood. It hasn't happened in a while. Do we talk about it on our show when I started dating Leslie? This is before the internets and Facebooks and shit. And we were dating for a good period of time. And I'd be talking to people on the phone because that's what you did back then. You like talked on the phone. And I was telling people like,
back
oh, hey,
then.
You know,
back
in the day. Then. Let me call you on the phone.
Memorize
the number and shit. And I'd be referencing Leslie, like, oh, I'm dating this woman, we're going out, blah, blah, blah. And there was maybe like one or two friends that were a little bit further distance that didn't get to see Leslie, but like, you know, knew me talking about her for very many times, and then would see like a picture or this or that. And it wasn't quite like this, but it was a little bit like, dude, you didn't tell me she was black. You know, like they weren't like mad about it, but it was like a little bit like, they're going through like a mental inventory. Did I say anything inappropriate? Oh shit. He didn't tell me she was black. Did I say anything wrong? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there'd be a thing. So like, you don't come out with like, oh, hey, I'm dating this girl, but she's black. Like, it's kind of weird to like lead with that, but it's also weird to like have not said it, and then like oh, you know what? I never told you, but by the way, she's black. Like, that's kind of like, I don't know how you, I never navigated that successfully. But so yeah, I'm lucky that that people didn't say racist shit. But you got to speak up. Number five, you're going to say racist things. Own up. In the middle of watching Degrassi, The Next Generation from season one, episode one, and I've developed a habit of asking my partner if he'll do things with me based on what's happening on the show. Would you coke with me because Craig and Manny are? Would you bid on in a date auction because Wesley wants Anya? It's become a joke. Cue to a two-part episode when Sav's parents arrange for Farah, the woman they're hoping he'll marry, to be in town when he's supposed to take his white girlfriend to the junior prom. Now cue to my, are you going to get arranged marriage to Farah text message? And this, no, wait, are you asking me this because I'm brown? Response, oops. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember one? I remember one I'll never forget.
Which one was that?
Was it Slave Party? Was that something like that? There's something really stupid I said like forever ago. I can't remember.
Might have been Slave Party. That was a bad one.
That was a bad one.
Yeah.
Number six. Power.
Carl's like, what the fuck what are the you saying about Slave Party?
No, it was something like I was trying to make a point.
You were making a joke, I think.
It wasn't even a joke. It was a point about like something like with blackface or this or that. But I said Slave Party. I was like, Drew, did you just say Slave Party?
Right. Did you say Slave Party?
And I remember, I was like,
yeah, no, that's not what, that's, whoa, that's, no.
I did.
Yeah.
I, that's not, you know, I was like, wait a minute.
Hey,
did I just say Slave Party?
And moved on.
Yeah, exactly. I owned it. I said that shit. I'm not like, no, that's not what I meant. You didn't hear the context. You weren't there. You didn't know the story. I wasn't thinking. I didn't hear it. Come on. Come on. I'm sorry you're hurt.
Yeah.
Number six, power dynamics don't magically disappear, not even during sex. It's important to remember that as a white person being sexual with a person of color, you're in a position of power. The fact that you're intimate with one another does not erase that. And that's my go-to response on Twitter when someone's like, yeah, you, because like some white person will say something out of pocket. I'm like, yeah, it's blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, you're saying I'm racist? How can I be racist? I've got a black girlfriend. I'm like, just because a black woman touches your penis does not make you not a supremacist.
Right, just, exactly. And just it doesn't like, magically go away.
Yeah, you've secured one black woman to touch your cock that doesn't, like, you know, change the fact that you're still white.
Truth. That's fact. Number seven.
If you only date people of color, and especially from one group in particular, be careful. I do think it's important to recognize what you're doing if you're only dating people of color, and especially from any one race or culture in particular, in terms of, like, the fetishizing versus, preference dating.
Mm-hmm.
You used to give me this all the time. Yeah, I haven't heard it from you in a while because I guess we were together long enough. But like in the beginning, you'd be like, you know, if we broke up, would you go back and date a white girl? Or would you continue to date black women? What would you do?
The thing is, you'd only date black women. I know.
Right.
Truth.
I've been tripping these
conversations
as well.
And I might take that back.
You might find a white girl that you like.
I think the more modern, you know, I might. I would say I'd. It would have
well,
to be
I'll
a,
say this,
an intersectional feminist white woman,
right? And even then, I do also think that like once you date outside your race, like if it's not a fetishizing situation, like it just opens you up to the possibility of doing
right,
that.
Yeah.
Like I don't necessarily think it's just like, and I would say this about any person of color, even that dates someone that's not the same color as them, or that dates a white person or is with a white person. It just like. Your possibilities change. Like you start to think right. Like, okay, like well, you don't only think of a possibility in a certain direction.
And I've been with you long enough that I feel like my own internal compass of beauty is not at all the sort of like standard westernized European, you know, descent of beauty, the white gaze of beauty. Because I find that like, you know, for various periods for a long time in my life, not just unattractive, but like what, like models on the runway, the stick thin, too tall. Like that's not my look at all. It's never have been.
I hear that little code speak there, Drew. I know what you're talking
speak.
About.
I'm just saying. I find black women more attractive.
Hmm. Good for you. Not so good for black women, but you know, whatever.
Very white guy fighting black women. That's not good for black women generally. Just across the board. That's not good for.
I'm just kidding.
Touche.
Yeah, so we had some other stuff, but we're running so long today because we had a lot to talk about and all that good stuff. So we'll hang that stuff. But we did want to talk about a couple of TV and some movie stuff. Did you see the movie Ex Machina?
Oh, my goodness.
Wasn't that amazing?
That was an amazing movie.
It was dope. Dude.
But it was so low key. Like, I felt like nobody even talked about it. And then all of a sudden, yeah, I was like.
It didn't get a lot of pub. No. Because I was watching it because I wanted to see it once it came out. And it did not disappoint. That was a fabulous movie.
So good.
I don't like to give too much status to different like rating systems and shit.
Okay.
But Rotten Tomatoes gives you the like, this is what the critics say. This is what the people that watch the movie say. And, you know, you can kind of like make a little bit of a broad statement about like if a movie gets like a 12. But one of those groups, like, that's probably a pretty bad movie.
Not going to be a good movie.
Well, this shit had, like, a 96 from a critics and, like, 92 exactly. from audience. Like, wow, that's
When they're both high, I feel like that's what you can – it's like if they're both low, that's a shitty movie. If they're both high, odds are it's going to be a pretty decent movie. So
exactly.
In the middle, I think, you know, it's going to come up to personal taste. But on the extremes, I think it's pretty reliable.
I thought it was a fantastic movie. And it only had, like, the three speaking roles, so it didn't have to
– Yeah, it was real, you know, tight, you know, confined story. And but it was really good.
Who's the person behind it? The director and the I don't know.
I don't know anything about it. I kept getting it mixed up with that horrible Johnny Depp movie that I thought it was.
Oh, that
so I kept thinking
terrible.
That's what this movie was. I was confused.
A Transcendence movie's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was crap.
Have you ever seen the movie the show Defiance? Carl?
I have not.
It's on Sci-Fi.
I've heard about it, but I've never watched it.
We just started watching it. It's available on Amazon Prime Video. And so we've run the second season, I think, right now. And I think they're finished, or they just finished their third season, or they're just finishing their third season. So we're playing catch up. But it's been really good. It's very interesting. It's futuristic, and it's on Sci-Fi. So
it reminds me of Eureka.
Yes, it's a lot like the show. Yeah, it's a lot like Eureka. But there's aliens.
Wasn't that sci-fi too?
Yeah, it was sci-fi.
Okay,
it's really good though. So we'd highly recommend it. And then as a comedy, Playing House, which is on USA. I don't know if you've seen that, but before either.
I think I've seen. Is that who's in that?
It's got the Keenan
Peele.
That's right. Yeah, that's why.
Keegan. Whatever.
I've seen it, but I've seen the previews. Yeah.
It's very, very funny. Really well done. 30-minute comedy about these two best friends, white girls, who one of them gets pregnant, the other one moves back to help her. Like they shack up, not romantically, but to raise the daughter together and you know, build a home. And it's their hometown that they live in, so there's a lot of dynamics around, including
her funny.
Boyfriend's very, very funny, really, like, you know, laugh out loud funny. So those were the three things that were on our radio this week, I think.
Did you guys watch do you watch Black Jesus?
No, but I need to, because people keep telling me how funny it is. It's on Cartoon Network, right?
It is. It is all right. So they just started season two.
Mm-hmm.
So the first two episodes are fantastic. It is. It's amazing. It's so.
What's
fun.
It
so
about?
Made by the guy that did the Boondocks.
Okay. Aaron Grumman or whatever his name is.
Yeah. So it's the premise is Jesus comes back to Compton and he's black.
That's the premise of it.
That's the premise. So
do we
have
to get into this?
Yeah, I can get with that.
It's really, you have to watch it.
Yeah, we're going to definitely check it out. I've been hearing a lot of good stuff on Cartoon Network. I feel like I ignore it because I assume it's for kids.
Jesus.
But I've been hearing a lot of other TV shows people going on.
I'm here for Black Jesus because that's the real Jesus.
You got to check it out. Yeah, you got to check it out, Drew. You'd like it. And then, so shout out to there was a call. Someone called in, a voicemail. I think it was last week or week before last, talking about Mr. Robot, and she went to the convenience store and had her hoodie on. So shout out to that lady.
That's Hiroz Hashib.
Yeah.
That was last week. I finished watching Mr. Robot. That is one of the best shows on TV to me.
What?
You have to catch up on that shit.
Yeah. Leslie refused to keep watching.
The last episode was bananas. Just what happened in the state of the world and how Elliot has influenced it and what his role is, what he knows and what he doesn't know and what people know about him. And it was really good.
You have to catch up on that, I think, then, for sure.
I'm a huge fan of
Michelle. What, anything else? Any other movies or TV you want to let the people
talk sometime? Oh, I saw that M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, yeah. What was it? The Gift? The Visit. The Visit.
Duh. Any good?
It's better than his last couple of
episodes. That's saying not so saying nothing. His last, the fucking Lady in the Mist.
Garbage.
He had some right garbage. Shit, dude.
Yeah. Making garbage.
But Sixth Sense and Unbreakable still the best two, but this one was okay. But it's, like I said, it's better. What about the
one in the cornfields in Pennsylvania with the aliens? I like that one.
That wasn't that good. What was it called? Signs?
Signs. Was it better than Signs?
Yeah. It was all right.
Was this better than Signs?
It was. It was. Okay. The twist was, it was a twist, but it wasn't a, oh my goodness, twist like the other ones. But it was pretty good. It was entertaining.
I just that you can't like forever and ever make every movie you always do have like.
Because what did he gotcha do? I'm twist. Going through all these. He did well a bunch of two smaller movies, and he did Sixth Sense, Unbreakable Signs. I thought that was a pretty good that's, you know trio. He was doing all right. Then The Village.
What was the one? Yeah, The Village.
That was terrible.
Awful.
Lady in the Water. Horrible. The Happening wow. about the trees. Fuck you, dude.
Oh yeah, well Marky Mark. Yeah.
Yes. Then he did The Last Airbender. And I know people that are fans of The Last Airbender. It's a comic or graphic novel, I think. And they were like so shitty. He did such a horrible job and like whitewashed it and was horrible. So I'll mention that. Then After Earth, that one with Will Smith and Jaden Smith.
Man, that was terrible.
Nope.
So I did watch that. And the best part of the movie was the tech in the movie.
Right.
I could care less about Will Smith and his son. And they were stupid. But the technology, like he had this suit that like it changed colors when his body temperature changed, and it could, the suit could tell when he was injured or he was sick, which it was that portion of it was the best part. The other one, the rest of the movie just sucked.
Jim, in my opinion, it was like, oh, I'm Will Smith. Let me get his giant feature film that stars my son in a huge role, and I'm like in a voiceover in a capsule like the whole movie. How convenient. You know what I'm saying?
If the jumpsuit should have been the star, because that was nice. I'm fighting just for that, but yeah.
Right. And then Wayward Pines. Yeah, I think he was one of the producers and directors of that whole shit. Yeah. It's a TV show. It was terrible. We started watching
it. Oh, that was horrible.
Matt Dillon, terrible.
It was like Matt Dillon, yeah. It was like a bad
Terrence Howard with a really bad conch.
It was a bad impression of Twin Peaks.
Yes, like a bad
like
impression
a bad impression of yeah. Twin Peaks.
And I'm sure there was some bullshit twist that happened in that, but I fucking stopped watching before it happened. And then The Visit. So, and then he's got a couple in pre-production, but that's interesting. Well, that's good to know. Don't go see that. I've heard good things about The Gift. We haven't seen it yet, but I've been hearing decent things about it.
I'm going to try to see it this weekend.
Oh, you are?
It's
yeah.
been
Oh, yeah. Well,
here,
let us
I
know what
leaving.
You think. We'll get it, go see it soon if we do decide to do that. I think that brings us to the end of our show, but Carl, make sure the people know where they can find you and listen and see, read all of your wonderful thoughts.
So I am on the Twitter
yes.
at CarlM3. You can also find me on the Gram, which I spend a lot more time probably than Twitter.
Do it for the Gram. I'm not going to do it.
It's hard to hear that. You more it. Gramming than Twitters, dude?
Do it for, well, Twitter, it's so this, I think it, I was thinking about that. And it comes down to my personality. I don't think a lot of people are interested in what I have to say. And that could just be, you know, just how I view myself. The only time that I really tweet, and you guys know this, is when I send you stuff. And then if I'm watching a show, I'll live tweet. But besides that, it's like, you know, I don't know if anybody listens. So, but I'll start to step up my game.
Are you saying, though, that Instagram is better suited for Dress Like Carl?
Yeah, because I'm a voyeur. I like
hashtag Dress Like Carl. I see.
Yeah, exactly.
Dress Like Carl.
Dress Like, hashtag Dress Like Carl.
Dress Like
exactly.
Carl, hashtag.
So I'm on Instagram, Carl RM, and then Tumblr, which I haven't been that active on lately. I have to get back on there. Is C3M Son. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
That sounds like a lyric from like Lil Wayne. C3M Son, born and raised.
Now you say you gram a lot. I'm on your gram page. I was about to say I haven't seen you on a gram in a while. It's been 3 weeks since you posted something on the gram.
Oh,
I didn't, oh hold
wait
on.
A minute. Are we getting fact checked? Are we getting fact checked live?
What?
Fact checked live.
So you said you don't post a lot. You just be on there?
He did say voyeuristic.
Right. But I mean, but then how are people supposed to interact with you there?
Yeah, don't give that out
when
if you're
post,
just going to watch people.
When I post something, you know,
if you want, to have a stalker,
saying,
if you want Carl
follow
to
follow people.
If you hot and you got bikini pics and you want Carl to stalk you, fly me up on CM3 Son.
But you can't be a runway model, right?
I like the thickums.
I see you, Drew. I see you what you're doing there.
That's another code, by the way. There's a code switch right there.
Right.
Wink, wink.
I try not to appropriate black vernacular English. I apologize to all my listeners.
From the bottom of your heart.
I'll do better.
You'll do better. Do better, dude. Do better.
I'm going to start posting more stuff. So I'm going to get more into it. You guys are calling me out.
Woohoo! Love it. I love the gram, so
that's she does. You gram a lot.
I gram a lot. I like pictures. Yeah. So I do gram a lot. Anyways, you can find us again, as I said, on just search Interracial John on any of the social networks, and also go to our website interracialjohn.com. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mac MAC. You can find that guy at Very White Guy, and I think that's it for tonight.
Very, very good. Well done.
Good night, everybody.
High five.